This is Freemasonry Today magazine, FMT, issue number 60 for winter 2022. FMT magazine is the official journal of the United Grand Lodge of England. The editor is Donna Hardy, and the editorial panel is Michelle Warvill, Sean Butler, Guy Roberts, Martin Cherry, and Julian Perry, the culture editor. It is published by Sunday at 207 Union Street, London, SE10LN, on the web at www.wearesunday.com for the United Grand Lodge of England. The editorial manager is Sean Butler, and the address is Freemasonry Today, Freemasons Hall, Great Queen Street, London, WC2B5AZ. For Masonic inquiries, you can email editor at freemasonrytoday.com or call 020 7831 9811. The magazine is copyright the United Grand Lodge of England 2022, and the opinions herein are those of the authors or persons interviewed only and do not reflect the views of the United Grand Lodge of England or Sunday. In a moment, we have the welcome from the Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe, Adrian Marsh, welcomes you to the winter issue. And then in the out and about section, there is provincial and district news in memory of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, plus quarterly communication, UGLE's seven-year strategy and the 1723 constitutions. In the stories section, there are two articles, Inside Knowledge, Freemasons Hall opens its doors to the public during Open House London, and Further Education, alumni of the Open University form Omnium Lodge. And then in the A Daily Advancement section, The Origins of African Lodge, Dr. Rick Berman on Prince Hall Freemasonry, Charity and Freemasonry, The Common Thread That Binds Us. And finally in this section, Royal Gifts, the Museum of Freemasonry's collection. In the Grand Lodge section is one article, Tried and Trusted, Four Provinces on Their Experience of the Members' Pathway 2.0. In the Royal Arch section, a Q&A with Jonathan Spence on the Royal Arch. And in the culture section are the book reviews, and the community section, Charity and the Craft, how the MCF and Freemasons support members and their families worldwide. And we finish up with the letters to the editor.
On page 3, from the Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E. As I write this, it has been an almost indescribably strange couple of weeks for me. My excitement at meeting our most worshipful Grand Master on the 7th of September, and the pride and honour I felt when he asked me to accept the position of Grand Secretary, was tragically more than offset with the deep sorrow I felt the following day, when the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II was announced. Like most active Freemasons today, I had only ever toasted the Queen, and very few of us had any experience of anyone other than Queen Elizabeth II as our monarch. She has symbolised service in a way that seems impossible for anyone to replicate. I was, therefore, grateful to have the opportunity to stand in solemn remembrance in our Grand Temple on the occasion of the September quarterly communication, when all brethren present reflected on the contribution Her Majesty had made to our great nation. It was extremely moving to hear more than 2,000 voices singing the national anthem, with the words "God Save the King" resounding around the Grand Temple. We also witnessed the past Pro-Grand Master, Most Worshipful Brother Peter Lowndes, install Jonathan Spence as Pro-Grand Master, who, in turn, installed Sir David Wootton as Deputy Grand Master and David Medlock as Assistant Grand Master. In just 7 days, there had been some tremendous changes for our nation, the craft, and for me personally. I have greatly appreciated the kind words I have received from many brethren on the announcement of my appointment. I hope that it was clear that, while I have communicated my retirement from the position as Chief Financial Officer of DS Smith PLC, I will remain an Executive Director and continue to serve on the board until my successor is in position. I have been extremely fortunate to have held senior positions in a number of large businesses, and I intend to bring this experience to bear as Grand Secretary. I am lucky to have a great team at UGLE, and in particular, our Deputy Grand Secretary, Graham Redman, to whom I have already apologised in advance for how much I will be leaning on him over the coming months. I have set myself the target of visiting a lodge in every province during my time in office, but this will take a while until my retirement from corporate life can begin in earnest, so please be patient with me. I have been asked a few times why I agreed to be Grand Secretary rather than become a gentleman of leisure, not least by my wife Sheila. I had the chance over the past few years, as a member of the Board of General Purposes, to gain a good understanding of UGLE and have always enjoyed contributing to the work of its president, Geoffrey Deering. I was likewise excited by the vision and ambition of our new Pro Grand Master, Jonathan Spence, and more than anything wanted to contribute. The role of Grand Secretary uniquely enables me to do this, and that is a far better prospect than a quiet retirement. The challenges we face as a membership organisation to continue to thrive and grow are well documented, as are the challenges we all face as the cost of living crisis takes hold. We have shown through the recent pandemic how we can make positive contributions to the communities we live in, and as we came out of the pandemic, how important it is to be able to meet and enjoy each other's company. Over the coming months, we will hear a clear and compelling strategy that we will all be able to contribute to, not only to ensure we survive, but also thrive. Each day when I walk my dogs, I have the privilege to view the magnificent buildings and grounds of the Royal Masonic School for Girls, and it always makes me think of our proud traditions and the ambition and tenacity of our forefathers to create such lasting legacies for the communities they lived in. I truly hope we can leave similar lasting tributes. I was attracted to become a Freemason by my then future father-in-law, Peter Vidler, who was the long-serving secretary of Strongman Lodge No. 45. I was regaled by his stories of lodge members and his constant fraternal happiness. He would spend all of his spare time ensuring that the experience his fellow brethren would have was as good as it possibly could be. This varied from the usual duties of lodge secretary to making tracing boards for the Lodge of Instruction in his workshop, engraving firing glasses for every member, researching ancient minutes, and generally being all things to all members. I am, of course, very aware that most lodges and chapters have their versions of Peter, and I am always very admiring of their efforts and service. I am extremely conscious of the debt of gratitude we owe to all our secretaries and scribes E, without whom none of us would be able to enjoy our Freemasonry. I therefore conclude my first column with a salute to all of our secretaries and scribes E. You make Freemasonry what it is. Adrian Marsh, Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E.
And then on page 6, under In Memoriam, we have the following article. Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, a lifetime of service and duty. On the death of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II in September, the Grand Master, His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent, and Pro Grand Master Jonathan Spence led members in offering their condolences on behalf of UGLE and their loyalty to King Charles III. Freemasons observed a minute's silence in honour of the late Queen Elizabeth II and heard a message from the Grand Master, His Royal Highness the Duke of Kent, to His Majesty King Charles III. It reads, Brethren, it is 70.5 years since Grand Lodge met in March 1952, following the death of a sovereign. On that occasion, Most Worshipful Brother His Majesty King George VI passed Grand Master. Few, if any, of those then present could have imagined that his successor, the young Queen Elizabeth II, would enjoy so long a reign, so long indeed that few of those present here today have known any other monarch. Many tributes have in recent days been paid to Her Late Majesty and to her exceptional service to this country and the Commonwealth. Many more will doubtless be paid in the days to come. I do not believe it's appropriate for me to try to add to those tributes, other than to say that I'm sure that all of us feel an almost personal sense of loss, a loss indeed with which most of us have not yet come to terms. Brethren, I ask you to join me in a minute's silence to honour the memory of Her Late Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. I should like to tell you that the Most Worshipful, the Grand Master, has sent a message of condolence to His Majesty the King in the following terms. Your Majesty, on behalf of all brethren under the United Grand Lodge of England, I extend to Your Majesty most sincere sympathy in your grievous loss. Your Majesty may be assured of the continued and unswerving loyalty of the Order. Signed, Edward, Grand Master, United Grand Lodge of England.
On page 9, Installation and Allegiance. This September, in his first quarterly communication as Pro-Grand Master, Jonathan Spence reflected on a momentous time of change, both for UGLE and for the monarchy of the United Kingdom. Brethren, today is not one for a long address from the presiding officer. As many of you will know, these installations are a first in the history of the United Grand Lodge of England, with three rulers being installed at the same quarterly communication. We are all very aware of the responsibilities we are each assuming, and are all very grateful for the messages of support and congratulations that we have each received. We will do our very best to maintain the high standards set by the Grand Master and, indeed, our predecessors. I am particularly grateful to the past Pro-Grand Master for presiding on behalf of the Most Worshipful the Grand Master over the first part of this communication and for installing me. I would like to thank the Grand Director of Ceremonies and his extended team for the seamless way in which today has been managed, with ceremonial of the usual exemplary standard. I would also like to thank particularly the Deputy Grand Secretary, the Assistant Grand Secretaries, and all the staff in Masonic Services for managing the logistical challenges of this meeting, including allocating 2,200 tickets to this communication in a short period of time. Today's quarterly communication is overshadowed by the death last week of our beloved Sovereign. You paid tribute to Her Late Majesty earlier in this meeting, and as you will appreciate, with the royal family being in royal mourning, the Most Worshipful the Grand Master is unable to attend today. I hope you will all agree it is appropriate that this quarterly communication send a message of condolence to the Grand Master in the following terms. Your Royal Highness, the members of the United Grand Lodge of England, in quarterly communication assembled, sent their sincere and heartfelt condolences to Your Royal Highness on the death of Your Royal Highness's cousin and our Sovereign Lady, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, of blessed and glorious memory. With the accession of His Majesty King Charles III, I have no doubt that Freemasons under the United Grand Lodge of England will show the same high level of loyalty and affection to His Majesty as they have done consistently to Queen Elizabeth II over the whole of her reign. We are living through a period of history we will all remember, and as we move forward, there are many challenges ahead, but much to be thankful for in the society in which we live. Freemasonry will continue to play its full part as life develops in the new reign. It only remains for me to say, God save the King.
This next article is entitled The Strategy for Freemasonry 2022 and Beyond. It's introducing UGLE's new 7-year plan to build firm foundations for the future of Freemasonry. The strategy for Freemasonry 2022 and beyond is a clear and direct plan to address the challenges that Freemasonry faces in the next 7 years, whilst also building on the existing success and unique qualities that our organisation possesses. The visual representation of these plans, worked on for a number of years by the Strategy Working Group, spearheaded by Programme Master Jonathan Spence, is a temple. The temple is symbolically built using the key features of the strategy, held in place by strong foundations with three columns highlighting the main priorities outlined within. These priorities underpin the approach and aspirations that the Strategy Working Group has for the future of English Freemasonry, both in the craft and the Royal Arch. The ground on which we build is our values of integrity, friendship, respect and charity. Strong Foundations outlines the need to implement an investment plan, people, capabilities and technology, to support the delivery of the strategy. Tap into our talent base, identifying and using members' skills and talents, whatever their rank, and update the Book of Constitutions, ensuring that it is fit for a modern membership organisation. Thriving membership reiterates our commitment to constantly reinforce the concept of our unique combination of fun stroke sociability and serious and timeless core values. Address the membership challenge at all levels, encouraging innovation, embracing change, and spreading successful ideas. And further enhance our members' understanding of our history and values. Coherent organisation summarises the necessity of communicating clear, concise and consistent messaging within UGLE and beyond, empowering and enthusing our members, supporting them with the tools and knowledge to act as ambassadors and become our future leaders, and further develop the RCG structure to maximise local impact across traditional provincial boundaries. And engaged in our communities reflects the need for us to build on the recent success of our members' response to the pandemic in their local communities and of our partnership with the MCF and other local and national charities, identify new areas for engagement in our communities, and communicate more openly and explicitly the full scale and community impact of members' current engagement through charitable donations and volunteering. And on the next page is a diagram of a temple, a visual representation of our strategy. And the pillars, the three pillars of the temple are thriving membership, coherent organisation and engaged in our communities, which we've just mentioned here. Along the bottom is strong foundations, which we also mentioned. Back to the text. I firmly believe that if our members are enthused and engaged by Freemasonry, they will be the greatest ambassadors for our organisation, thus encouraging others to aspire to join, says Jonathan Spence, Programme Master. Another of the key takeaways from the strategy for Freemasonry 2022 and beyond is the need for a change in attitudes throughout the organisation in order for us to move forward. As Freemasons, we can sometimes find new ideas and advancements that are met with some scepticism and the old adage of no because. It is this that we need to urgently address in order to make sure that the ambitious plans presented within this strategy can be properly embedded. Instead, we need to move towards a yes-if approach to all levels. Change is not always easy, but the rewards will be fruitful if we can engage fully with this fundamental shift in the way we do things. To conclude, this is a significant moment in the history of our organisation, and in order for this to succeed, we need all members to be fully supportive. It goes without saying that the United Grand Lodge of England and the Supreme Grand Chapter can provide the framework of this rollout, but it is through the work of each of us as Freemasons to help spread the word and to help implement the strategy for Freemasonry 2022 and beyond. Together, we can make sure that the next 7 years are even more enjoyable and special than the last 300.
On page 14, Shaping Society. As we approach the tercentenary of the 1723 constitutions, Dr. Rick Berman examines how the blueprint for modern Freemasonry permeated popular thinking in America and beyond. Journalist James Marriott wrote an article in The Times in May about how the cultural, philosophical, and moral practices of social elites helped to drive social change. He argued that this was a function of social prestige, and how, over time, the views of those elites are emulated by others in society to the point that they enter the mainstream. There are many examples, large and small. They include the Reformation, the emergence of Protestantism in the 16th century, and the political and intellectual changes that followed, and the more permissive society that developed from the counterculture movement of the 1960s and 70s. But the example I'd like to highlight is the Enlightenment, a philosophy that developed in the late 17th and early 18th century. There is weight to Marriott's thesis, and we should bear it in mind when considering the publication of the 1723 Constitutions and how the principles set out in that document by a small group at the centre of English Freemasonry became an accepted part of mainstream thinking, not just within Britain, but Europe, the Americas, and elsewhere. The Constitutions of the Freemasons, published on behalf of a young Grand Lodge of England, founded only 6 years earlier, contained key philosophical principles to which Freemasons were expected to adhere. Religious tolerance, constitutional government, civic responsibility, meritocracy, education, courtesy, and benevolence. They were accompanied by general regulations which set out an administrative structure for Freemasonry that contained radical principles, including the election of lodge officers, with every member wielding one vote, and democratic accountability. The publication of the 1723 Constitutions placed Freemasonry at the leading edge of 18th century society. Within a few decades, it had become the largest and most influential of Britain's many clubs and societies. The message of enlightenment advocated by the Grand Lodge of England spread rapidly. The popularity of the Constitutions was such that it was printed across Europe and North America, not least by Benjamin Franklin, whose 1734 reprinting, For the Use of the Brethren in North America, was distributed not only in Philadelphia, but across the Atlantic seaboard, from Boston to Charleston. The book was translated into French, Dutch, and German, was pirated widely, and became the model for the Constitutions of the Grand Lodge of Ireland. It also provided the foundations for Ahiman Raison, the constitutions of the rival Ancients Grand Lodge, which was formed in the 1750s, and, following independence, the constitutions of America's state Grand Lodges. As the messages contained in the constitutions gained traction across Europe and America, Freemasonry became a vector for the spread of Enlightenment principles. In North America, the constitutions helped to lay the foundations that shaped local and national governance, and its tenets are recognizable in the United States founding documents, most clearly in the Declaration of Independence. This is not a coincidence. The transformation of Britain's North American colonies into the United States of America was a tangible expression of Enlightenment philosophy. That all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Freemasonry was recognized as an organization capable of bringing together and binding educated, aspirational men, who might have different ideas and come from different walks of life, with Masonry the center and union, and the means of conciliating true friendship and persons that must have remained at a perpetual distance. Across North America, the Lodge was a de facto school for politicians, outlining principles that helped to create a new republic and forge a different form of politics to that prevalent in Europe. Freemasonry was also an integral part of what was emerging as a new social movement in America, where new criteria for success, capability, and intellect were embraced. By the last quarter of the 18th century, the Lodge had become a secular space for America's leaders, and an organization that was perceived as working for the benefit of the community. George Washington, in a reply to a formal Masonic welcome and address in Charleston, South Carolina, in May 1791, noted that, "Your sentiments on the establishment and exercise of our equal government are worthy of an association whose principles lead to purity of morals and are beneficial of action. the fabric of our freedom is placed on the enduring basis of public virtue, and will, I fondly hope, long continue to protect the prosperity of the architects who raised it. I shall be happy on every occasion to evince my regard for the fraternity. Freemasonry's standing in post-colonial America achieved tangible form in the dedication of public buildings from the U.S. Capitol in Washington, D.C., where the cornerstone was laid in a Masonic ceremony by George Washington, to Paul Revere, Grand Master of Massachusetts, laying the cornerstone of the Massachusetts State House in Boston. A similar pattern emerged in Latin America half a century later. Freemasonry had been carried there by merchants, French, English, and Scottish, as well as Dutch and Irish, and was influenced by the United States. But perhaps the key factor in its journey across the continent was the pro-independence movement, where Enlightenment principles were ranged against the constraints of Spanish and Portuguese colonial rule. In many countries, not just Argentina, Chile, Venezuela, and Colombia, the connections are remembered today in the biographies of key pro-independence Freemasons, including Simon Bolivar, José de San Martín, and Francisco de Paula Santander. From January 2023, a new exhibition at the Museum of Freemasonry explores how the 1723 constitutions helped in inventing the future.
And before we get to the next article, there's a two-page spread just highlighting the existence of the shop at Freemasons Hall. That's at 60 Great Queen Street, London, WC2B5AZ. Visit the shop at Freemasons Hall, it says. See our large selection of Christmas gift ideas. The award-winning shop at Freemasons Hall showcases a wide range of products inspired by Freemasonry, the museum and the Freemasons Hall, a full range of regalia, giftware and beyond. We look forward to seeing you. Or you can shop online at www.shopatfmh, that's shopatfmh.com. And another small announcement following on from that is the next page is Craftcast. This is announcing the existence of Craftcast, the Freemasons podcast. Listen to the Craftcast and discover a unique perspective from inside the fascinating world of Freemasonry. It's available on all popular platforms, including Spotify, Amazon Music, and Apple Music. Listen to the most recent episodes of the show, and then in the magazine there's a QR code that you could scan. To contact the Craftcast team, email podcasts@ugle.org.uk. So now we begin our usual and traditional browse around the provinces out and about, starting with Metropolitan. A member of Westminster and Keystone Lodge, and currently a serving Royal Navy submariner, Hugo Mitchell Heggs, founded the HMS Audacious campaign in 2018, and Audacious is spelt O-A-R-D-A-C-I-O-U-S, starting with OR as in boats. For the challenge, he crossed the Atlantic Ocean by boat in December 2019, rowing 3,000 miles from the Canaries to Antigua in shifts of 2 hours on and 2 hours off all day, every day, and completing the crossing in 37 days in a team of 4 Royal Navy submariners. His first campaign successfully raised more than £120,000 for military mental health charity projects within the Royal Navy and Royal Marines charity. Since then, he's helped raise an additional £430,000 for the Submariner Memorial Appeal, successfully built and unveiled by His Royal Highness the Duke of Cambridge in May at the National Memorial Arboretum. I've grown the HMS Audacious campaign further, and I'm going to be rowing across the Atlantic Ocean again in December this year, continuing to raise funds for military mental health charity projects, he says. You can follow the team's progress at HMS Audacious, that's all one word, I'll spell it, HMSOARDACIOUS, HMSAudacious.com.
Number 2, Bedfordshire. On the Ball. The first Saturday in October saw the installation ceremony of Bedfordshire's themed rugby lodge, the Roger de Summery Rugby Lodge number 6488. It also marked the start of the 75th year of the foundation of the lodge. New worshipful master, George Andrew Potter, received the ceremonial rugby ball from the APGM, Hugh Love. The deacon's wand, with an additional crossbar formed into rugby posts and with rugby ball-shaped gavels, is an example of some of the unique differences of this themed lodge, and was kindly made and donated by worshipful brother Roger Wood. A new banner has been designed, incorporating the rugby theme, while retaining the Roger de Summery lodge traditions, and it awaits approval, along with the addition of the word rugby to the lodge's name. If you're interested in rugby, or you are a former player, a coach, a fan, or are just curious, come along to Roger de Summery Rugby Lodge number 6488 for a ceremony with differences. There are also plans to combine some meetings with watching a game at one of the local rugby clubs.
And next comes Berkshire, Confidence Boost. PALS, that's Partners for Active Leisure Scheme, PALS, a local West Berkshire-based charity, was awarded a grant from the Berkshire Masonic Charity for £1,100 at the end of 2021, which was used to support an overnight experience for 20 children in June this year. The charity has been working with children and young people with physical disabilities for more than 20 years. It's committed to giving them opportunities to grow in confidence and self-esteem, helping them to achieve their full potential through providing leisure and recreational activities. The charity offers a wide variety of exciting social and leisure activities for participants aged 5 to 18. Attendees are supported in activities by a team of trained volunteers and the PALS manager, who oversees the event, meaning parents can enjoy a much-needed break. The Young Adults Group has been running for 10 years and takes part in a variety of social events and residential trips where emphasis is placed on encouraging the individual to be as independent as they possibly can. Helen Randall from the charity said a massive thank you for your amazing donation towards our overnight experiences for our youngsters. We had our first one in 3 years in June for our younger children, and we have another one planned in September for the older children. We had a fabulous time, and for many of the children, this was the first time they'd ever been away from their families. A huge achievement for our PALS and their parents. And none of this would have been possible without your support.
Number 4. Buckinghamshire. Target smashed. In August, CEO of the Masonic Charitable Foundation, Les Hutchinson, announced the receipt of a charitable donation of £2,118,531 from John Clark, the head of Freemasonry in Buckinghamshire. The sum of money was collected by more than 3,000 Freemasons in Buckinghamshire over a period of 6 years. To raise the funds, many well-received community events were planned and delivered, including sponsored skydives and kayakathons, Bollywood nights and summer fetes, cream teas and Elvis tribute nights, mountaineering and abseiling, swimming marathons and sponsored walks, perambulations around lodge rooms, and cycling between every Masonic centre in the province. The culmination of this successful fundraising period was a festival finale dinner at the MK Dons Stadium in Milton Keynes. Freemasons and their families joined together for a celebratory evening of entertainment by recently made brother Ray Lewis of the Drifters, followed by the reveal of the grand total. Accompanied by streamers, balloons and music, Les Hutchinson announced the figure as the big screen on the stage displayed the final amount raised to be a fantastic £2,118,531, surpassing the original £2 million target.
Next, Cambridgeshire. Young people in Cambridgeshire will continue to receive much-needed free, confidential and professional support from Centre 33 following a £660 donation provided by local Freemasons. The donation was made by Thurkill Lodge, which meets in Cambridge and included matched funding from the City and University of Cambridge Masonic Charitable Trust. A cheque for the grand total was handed over by Lodge members Bob Golding and Eddie Osborne to Michelle Birch at Centre 33. Birch, head of operations, projects and communications for the organisation, said, "At Centre 33, we're seeing increasing numbers of young people in need of support with their mental health or their practical issues. Every donation from the community means that we can see more young people. It also means we can ensure our hubs are equipped with comfortable furnishings, that our staff teams have the equipment they need, and that each young person we see has the best possible experience when their need is high. This donation from Cambridge Freemasons is so appreciated and will go a long way towards making a positive impact in the lives of young people."
Number 6. Cornwall. Dedication and duty. David Walter Pascoe has celebrated a milestone 50 years as a Freemason in Cornwall. His Masonic career began in 1972 when he was initiated into the Colville Smith Lodge No. 573. David quickly took a keen interest in the work of the lodge, joined the officers list, and became a steward in February 1975, an office he held for 4 years. In February 1979, he was appointed junior deacon, and the following year became senior deacon. He was installed into the chair of King Solomon, and in 1982 became the 44th Worshipful Master of Colville Smith Lodge, No. 5738. One of the highlights in David's year in the chair was to initiate, pass and raise his father, Walter, who he proposed exactly 10 years and 2 days after he himself was initiated. All of his father's ceremonies were conducted on the same months as his own. Having left the chair, he supported his lodge as the immediate past master in 1983 and senior warden in February 1992. He again took the chair of King Solomon in February 1993 to become the 54th Worshipful Master. He also held the office of Director of Ceremonies for 9 years, from February 1995. David took the chair for the third time in February 2022 to become the 84th Worshipful Master in his 50th year of being initiated. He joined the Cornish Masters Lodge No. 3324 in May 2008. He was also a member of the Robert Elliott Lodge, No. 9483, and held the office of Assistant Secretary in October 2012, Junior Warden in 2013, and Senior Warden in 2014 for 2 years. David's Freemasonry career further progressed when he was promoted to Past Provincial Junior Grand Warden in April 1998 by the then Provincial Grand Master, Right Worshipful Brother Nicholas Barrington. He also received a grand rank promotion to Past Junior Grand Deacon in April 2015, and was further promoted to Past Deputy Grand Swordbearer in April 2017, and to Past Grand Swordbearer in April 2022. His Masonic career has not been confined to craft masonry, as he joined the Holy Royal Arch and was exalted into Volubian Chapter No. 75 in November 1991. He soon joined the officers list and took the chair of Joshua in March 2003, the chair of Haggai the following year, and became the most excellent Zerubbabel in March 2002. In March 2004, he took the office of Scribe Ezra, which he held for 11 years. David became a joining member of the Cornish First Principles chapter, No. 3324, in January 2003. He was appointed steward in March 2011, assistant scribe Ezra the following year, and first assistant sojourner in March 2013. He took the chair of Joshua in March 2014 and most excellent Zerubbabel in March 2019. He is also an honorary member of 5 chapters, including Salonian, Valletort, St. Martin's, Tewington, and Zetland. His Royal Arch career further progressed when he was promoted to Provincial Deputy Grand Director of Ceremonies in October 2004 by the then Grand Superintendent Most Excellent Companion Nicholas Barrington, further promoted by him to Second Provincial Grand Principal in October 2007, and the following year to Provincial Grand Director of Ceremonies, an office he held for over 6 years. David received a grand rank promotion to Past Grand Standard Bearer in April 2009. He was appointed Grand Superintendent in June 2014, the 13th Grand Superintendent, in the 140th year since the Provincial Grand Chapter of Royal Arch Masons was constituted in Truro. He has supported the Royal Arch and Craft Masonry throughout this time. In November 2005, he also joined the Falmouth chapter Rose Croix, number 770. He proceeded through the offices and was enthroned Most Wise Sovereign in July 2014. He was invested as Treasurer at the enthronement meeting in July 2016 and has continued to hold that post to this day. Later that year, in December, David was invited to attend a meeting of the Supreme Council in London, where he attained to 30th degree. He was also invited to join the Laurie Francis chapter, number 1137, for members of the higher degree, which he joined in January 2017. David has served Freemasonry with great distinction and loyalty to duty throughout his 50 years of membership. He is a great ambassador to the cause and is always willing to help out and to share his expertise, which he delivers in a caring and helpful manner, gaining the respect of all those he meets. As the saying goes, if you want something doing, ask a busy man, and David is tireless in his work.
Cumberland and Westmoreland. Cumberland and Westmoreland Freemasons marked the official launch of the 2027 festival with an impressive cruise on Lake Windermere. The festival is a five-year appeal to raise funds for the Masonic Charitable Foundation, the MCF. On the night, Provincial Grand Master Bill Bewley launched the festival with a huge donation of £250,000 from Cumberland and Westmoreland Benevolent Fund. It was a fine example of the great work we do as Freemasons.
Number 8. Derbyshire. Great Hall. A superb night was held at Derby Freemasons Hall in September when three lodges, Spencer, Repose and St. Werburgher, got together to invite friends to take a look around the hall and find out more about Freemasonry.
Devonshire. A Devonshire Freemasons auction has raised £6,000 for charity. Deputy Provincial Grand Master Nick Ball was joined by several other members of the Executive and Devonshire's Grand Charity Steward Reuben Ayres. In total, 44 brethren and their partners attended the event. A superb supper was followed by an auction of 35 items donated by generous Freemasons, all of which went under the hammer of professional auctioneer and Freemason Anthony Eldridge, raising an amazing £5,625. Four further donations brought the night's total to £6,000. This will be added to the Devonshire Province's Festival 2023 total. Items included everything from two prints by the celebrated local artist Robert Linkovich to two signed and framed Plymouth Argyle football shirts and a 2004 Tag Heuer watch. A special thank you goes out to everyone who donated.
Number 10. Dorset. In tribute. Head of Dorset Freemasonry, Graham Glazier, recently presented the Craig Smith Memorial Trophy to the best guide dog training team, voted for by Service Dogs UK, South West. The trophy is in tribute to recently deceased Freemason, Craig Paul Smith. Born in 1982, Craig grew up in Zimbabwe. He served with the Royal Marines and was discharged on medical grounds, suffering PTSD following a tour in Afghanistan. He was initiated into Amphibious Lodge in February 2016. He came to the attention of the almoner of his lodge, Rod Playford, himself a former Royal Marine, having tried to take his own life, and was subsequently hospitalised in July 2020. There followed periods of hospital visits to see specialists for assessments, and with the assistance of the Royal Marines Association and Dorset Masonic Care, a series of psychiatric assessments and further support was funded. The Masonic Charitable Foundation in London also became involved and helped address some financial issues. Craig was selected for a support dog through Service Dogs UK, with assistance from the Royal Marines Association and our provincial charity. He travelled back and forth for training and was paired with Labrador, Bella. Due to COVID-19, face-to-face meetings were difficult, and his counselling was done via a video link. Sadly, it was during one of these video sessions, on the 21st of September 2021, that Craig had a catastrophic seizure and died with Bella at his side. His funeral took place at Harbourview Crematorium, Randall's Hill, Lichit Minster, on the 23rd of October 2021. In a tribute to Craig, Dorset Freemasons donated the sum of £1,000 to Service Dogs UK, ring-fenced for the South West. When the training team talked about awarding the Craig Smith Memorial Trophy, they felt it should go to the team that had shown courage, determination, selflessness and cheerfulness in the face of adversity, which are the four elements of the commando spirit that Craig lived his life by as a Royal Marines commando. The 2022 recipient has demonstrated all four elements of the commando spirit in supporting their Service Dogs UK cohort, work colleagues and their dog. This year's recipients of the Craig Smith Memorial Trophy are Claire and Charlie. Manager of Service Dogs UK South West, Nigel Hubb, said, "To all at the Dorset Freemasons, thank you for your support. Craig, I'm sure, would rather none of it happened in his name, and he would rather have been there in person himself. I wore my flip-flops at the presentation, as that's what Craig would have done."
Now we come to Durham next. During breakfast at the opening of the annual inter-provincial clay pigeon shooting competition, the programme master for Durham, John Paul Thompson, laid down the gauntlet to another four Masonic provinces represented at the Thimbleby shooting ground in North Yorkshire. This was the first time in the 40-year history of the competition that the province of Durham had been represented. John Paul's team of 11 was the largest turnout and consisted of Freemasons from lodges throughout Durham. The top six scores from each province would be submitted. The other provinces who participated were Cumberland and Westmorland, West Lancashire, Yorkshire North and East Riding, Yorkshire West Riding. There were 50 shooters in total, six of whom were guests and the rest Freemasons. The event raised £555, and this was donated to the Great North Air Ambulance Service. The province of Durham lifted the trophy with a clear, undeclared margin. Next year's interprovincial competition will be held on the 1st of October 2023 within a venue at Penrith. Contact umar.hanif, that's umar.hanif, at ukdevelopmentcorp.com for more details.
Number 12. East Kent. Back on track. Downs Lodge in Deal has made a £250 donation towards replacing important items recently stolen from the local East Kent Railway Trust. Crucial property taken includes lengths of narrow-gauge track panels and a complete narrow-gauge locomotive, with the total loss coming to around £14,000. The local community was devastated by the theft. This much-loved site at Shepherdswell has a cafe, a model railway, a woodland walk, and historic restored trenches from World War II, and is free to visit 6 days a week. Operations are continuing, but plans that had been in place for the future have been put on hold. The team at the site is distressed at the loss of equipment, and any help is very much appreciated.
Next we go to East Lancashire. Back in September, Edgerton Lodge number 1392 celebrated its 150-year anniversary. Worshipful Master Brother Benjamin Jackson opened the lodge, after which the Deputy Provincial Grand Master and the Provincial Delegation entered the lodge room. The Worshipful Master offered the gavel to the Deputy Provincial Grand Master, Brother John Farrington, which he graciously declined. On the sound of the WM's gavel, everyone present observed a minute's silence in respect of the passing of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II. The Worshipful Master then again offered the Deputy Provincial Grand Master the gavel, and this time he accepted it, and then occupied the chair for the 150th celebration. Worshipful Brother Martin Stott read a history of the lodge. The 150-year certificate was placed in the centre of the lodge room, and the provincial grand chaplain gave an oration. The deputy PGM then reiterated what a fantastic achievement it was for Edgerton Lodge to have reached its 150th year before the Worshipful Master presented the deputy PGM with a cheque for £5,000 towards the EL 2026, the EL 2026 Festival. Before retiring from the lodge, the deputy PGM announced that he had a special duty to perform. Worshipful Brother Martin Stott was promoted to past provincial grand registrar for all the hard work and commitment he had shown to the lodge. The Deputy Provincial Grand Director of Ceremonies orchestrated the toast list, after which the Deputy Programme Master gave a heartfelt response. The Assistant Provincial Grand Master, Worshipful Brother John A. Griffin, then toasted the Master, after which Brother Benjamin Jackson responded. A fantastic evening was had by all. It was one that Edgerton Lodge, number 1392, can be proud of for the next 150 years to come.
Number 14. Essex. Freemasons help families. The Essex Freemasons, through the Masonic Charitable Foundation, have given a £6,000 grant to Little Edie, a Chelmsford-based charity supporting underprivileged and in-need families. This grant will go a long way in helping founders Tess Griggs and Deb McLaren to carry on their good work. They currently support more than 60 families throughout the whole of Essex, but mainly in the Chelmsford area, with food parcels, household goods boxes, and disposable products, plus toys and games. The number of households supported has doubled over the last 2 years, and looks to still be increasing, particularly as the cost of living crisis takes hold. Tess first had the idea for the charity while on a trip to Romania in 2016. She was introduced to a small child in need of help, and on returning to the UK, she started to send support back to him and his family. While doing this, she decided to set up similar support closer to home, and started Little Edie in the Melbourne area of Chelmsford. Chris Hicks, the Provincial Grand Charity Steward for Essex Freemasons, said, "Support for a charity like Little Edie is at the heart of our community engagement, and we are proud to help them continue helping families in need. And we were delighted to learn that the little boy Tess helped in Romania is now thriving and going to school."
Gloucestershire next. Gloucestershire Freemasons took part in this year's Gloucester Day Parade to show that they are very much part of the local community today and have been for more than 300 years. The day was sunny, not only for its weather, but also for its mood, with what Ian Davies, the Assistant Provincial Grand Master who led the contingent, described as a real festival atmosphere. The event is growing in popularity, and the hope is that as three lodges were proudly ranged under their banners this year, more will take part in the future. As the United Grand Lodge of England encourages Freemasonry to step out of the shadows and regain its place as a respected part of its local communities, it will be great to see more of Gloucestershire's 82 lodges stepping forwards.
Number 16. Hampshire and Isle of Wight. A hand to hold. St Mary's Hospital in Portsmouth has had boxes of toys delivered, as well as a hug of teddy bears, thanks to Hampshire and Isle of Wight Freemasons. Members of Solent Lodge No. 6182, which meets in Cossum, raised the money and arranged for the bears to be delivered by Teddies for Loving Care, a scheme launched by Freemasons 21 years ago. Youngsters who are undergoing treatment or experiencing stressful situations find them calming, while medical staff find the bears useful in helping to describe to children what treatments they will be undergoing. John Pearson, Provincial Grand Charity Steward, said, "Teddies for Loving Care has been a magnificent success and has helped so many children, who always get to keep the toys. The money from Solent Lodge also enabled new toys to be bought, which makes things easier for children and their parents. It is just one small example of the charitable works that our members do in their communities." And there's a second story for Hampshire and Isle of Wight. Living in Hope. Local Freemasons funded a much-needed support hub in Bournemouth for Hope Housing's training and support programme. The charity provides accommodation for homeless and vulnerable adults and helps them integrate back into society. Its new hub was entirely funded by Freemasons from Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, plus Dorset, to enable the charity's support workers to use quiet rooms to conduct private one-to-one sessions with those who it is helping. An APGM from Hampshire and Isle of Wight, Chris Lockwood, said, The new hub, which we are proud to have funded, provides the perfect place for important sessions between support workers and their clients.
Herefordshire next. Palladian supports Parkinson's UK. Palladian Lodge number 120 has raised £1,085 for the Hereford and District branch of Parkinson's UK. During his time as master of Palladian Lodge, Phil Burgess chose them as one of his master's charities. The cheque was presented at the Kindle Centre to chair of the society, Chris Frith, by Secretary Dennis Cox and charity steward Clive Edwards. Frith thanked the Freemasons for the donation, which will go towards helping the 600 or so people affected by Parkinson's in Herefordshire.
Number 18. Hertfordshire. Talk at the Temple. The annual meeting of Provincial Grand Lodge took place at Freemasons Hall, London. Provincial Grand Master Neil Connolly said, "Brethren, as I look around at the faces in this splendid temple, it is a genuine delight to see so many of you here today. Last year, as I stood before you as your new Provincial Grand Master, we thought that we had put trying times behind us. World events, the economy, and the very sad passing of our sovereign, Queen Elizabeth II, have continued to challenge us all. New ideas and initiatives are always to be considered when responding to the influences that change brings upon us. However, we must remain cognizant of the principles of unanimity and concord by continuing to strive to ensure that our masonry remains fun and a haven from the distractions and pressures of modern life. If not, it will lose its appeal and relevance to those who will become its future."
Jersey. Tech charity Lifelights and local Freemasons are working together to help bring the outside world in for life-limited children on Jersey. The charity recently held a photo shoot with Jersey Freemasons to highlight the need for children to escape the confines of their conditions by using life-changing technology. Virtual reality, or VR, is one resource that Lifelights donates to give the children a chance to leave behind their hospice bed or wheelchair and walk along virtual beaches or explore other countries. The photo shoots were part of a campaign to highlight the ongoing support of Freemasons countrywide for the work of Lifelights. Jersey Freemasons have committed to support their work to make sure the children continue to have access to the much-needed technology.
Number 20. Leicestershire and Rutland. Loughborough Lifesaver. Residents of Loughborough have received a new defibrillator thanks to Freemasons who meet at the Masonic Hall in the town centre. One of the lodges meeting there is the Loughborough Lodge of Installed Masters, led this year by Paul Blakemore. As this is the 50th anniversary of the formation of the lodge, Paul and his team decided to mark the occasion by raising funds to install a community defibrillator on the external wall of the Loughborough Masonic Centre on Orchard Street near Ashby Square. The money was raised through raffles, special dinners, a music evening, and a donation from the Loughborough Masonic Centre Company. The Masonic Centre Facilities Manager, Ian Hammond, said, "We are delighted to be able to provide local residents with this potentially life-saving device."
Next comes Lincolnshire. Flying Freemasons. A Flying Freemasons event recently gave members the chance to experience glider and powered flights while raising more than £600 for the Lynx 2025 festival. The organiser was experienced pilot and flying instructor Dave Gibson, who is master of Scunthorpe's St Lawrence Lodge. Dave brought together members of the Trent Valley Gliding Club and the POM Flying Club at Humberside Airport, where he's chief instructor. Pilots from the POM Flying Club and the Trent Valley Gliding Club worked tirelessly to coordinate takeoffs and landings and make sure as many people as possible were able to enjoy a flight on a safe airfield. Provincial Grand Master Dave Wheeler flew into Curtin from Humberside Airport in a light aircraft with Dave Gibson at the controls and Assistant Provincial Grand Master Peter Brooks in the back seat. The oldest flyer was Alan Robinson, who's 89. Dave Wheeler said it was really was an excellent day. Everyone who took part in Flying Freemasons seemed to have a thoroughly enjoyable afternoon at a fantastic event. I'd like to thank Dave Gibson, who was the driving force behind organising the day, and Mark Gadley and his team from the Trent Valley Gliding Club.
Number 22. Norfolk. A new start. Norfolk Freemasons have donated £9,050 to boost civic charity funds to help address the increased demand for family support caused by the pandemic. The grant has been given to Homestart Norfolk, a local charity supporting the health and well-being of families with young children in Norwich and across Norfolk. The charity provides vital support to families who are facing tough times by matching trained volunteers to work alongside parents, addressing a range of challenges that can impact them, giving their children the best start in life. Homestart Norfolk was chosen by the Lord Mayor of Norwich, Councillor Kevin Maguire, and the Sheriff of Norwich, Caroline Jarrold, to be civic charity for the year 2021/22, as they recognise the value of Homestart Norfolk's work in having the greatest impact on children's early years, when a supportive and nurturing environment is so crucial. Head of Norfolk Freemasons, Stephen Allen, said, "Norfolk Freemasons were delighted to be able to assist Homestart Norfolk via the Lord Mayor and Sheriff of Norwich's civic charity with the funding to ensure they could continue their vital role in our community."
Now, Northamptonshire and Huntingdonshire. Peterborough Freemasons recently opened their doors to the public to explain what Freemasonry is about. Visitors explored the Peterborough Masonic Centre in Ellindon and found a very different organisation than myths would have them believe. The various displays and stands not only gave a history of the Freemasons, but also showed their commitment and work within the community. Present were the Masonic Charitable Foundation, the MCF, together with the Women's Freemasons. Little Miracles also had a stand at the event, highlighting the collaborative nature of Freemasonry. The Provincial Grand Master for Northamptonshire and Huntingdonshire, Right Worshipful Brother Mark Constant, said, "It is always a great pleasure to open our doors to the public and explain a little more about Freemasonry and to have the opportunity to explain our key messages of friendship, charity, respect and integrity. The Peterborough Open Day enabled people to find out more about our work and social activities with displays from our local museum curator showing our 300 years of history to our work today, including recent fundraising and showing people around inside our lodge rooms."
Number 24. Northumberland. In the race. Freemasons from Northumberland and Durham came together for the first Northumberland vs Durham Karting Grand Prix. The event was held at the Team Sport Indoor Karting Track in Newcastle and was attended by 40 Freemasons along with their friends and family members. Team captain for Northumberland was Deputy Provincial Grand Master Kevin Stannard, who said, "It was great to see so many Freemasons from both provinces at a really fun event, enjoyed by us all." Northumberland won on the day, picking up both the team win and the fastest overall driver. Durham team captain, Provincial Grand Master John Thompson, was one of the racers for Team Durham, and afterwards he spoke from the podium on the second place spot and thanked everyone for coming, enthusing all in attendance with the rallying cry, "We are stronger together."
Now, North Wales. North Wales Freemasons have raised more than £3,000 to help build a ground floor wet room to improve the life of local Freemason Jamie Benson, who had been seriously injured in an accident. Jamie was a painter and decorator employed in the Cheshire-Shropshire-North Wales borders. He lives in Nantwich with his wife Del and their two sons. While on holiday in Cornwall in May 2021, Jamie was involved in a horrendous car accident and now uses a wheelchair. After 6 months in hospital, he returned home and was confined to the lounge with no access to a bathroom, so a hospital bed was set up and carers came in 3 times a week to assist him. The local authority wasn't in a position to help Jamie with purpose-built housing that would give him a bathroom and a dedicated bedroom, so Freemasons looked into building him an extension. Plans were drawn up and permission sought from the local authority. Various North Wales lodges, including Berwyn, Plasteg and Offa, raised the money needed. Donations from the North Wales Recovery Communities and the Coin Stone Lodge brought to the total to more than £3,000. Offa's lodge's worshipful brother Neil Matthews donated the groundworks, while builder brother Tom Davis donated the block and brickwork. Other required materials were donated by developers whose project Jamie had worked on. In late September, plans for a ground floor bedroom that Jamie and Dell are able to share alongside a purpose-built wet room were signed off by the local authority and the structure was built. Jamie no longer needs to be attended on by carers and he's far more independent. The family's gratitude knows no bounds.
Number 26. Nottinghamshire. Mindful Masons. Back in August, four members of the Freemasons of Bassetlaw attended an evening session at Worksop Mental Health Charity in Sam's name, where Chairman Tony Wood presented them with a cheque for £500 to help with their activities. The charity gives men and women a chance to talk about their mental health problems and issues. Set up by Stuart Fisher and his friend Richard McHugh after Fisher's son tragically took his own life, they were determined to help other people. In Fisher's words, "If we only ever prevent one person from doing what Sam did, we will have succeeded."
Shropshire next. Hope House Children's Hospice has received a special delivery of teddy bears for the children who visit for respite care. The bears have been donated through the Teddies for Loving Care Scheme's Shropshire branch, whose work is funded by the generous donations of the Freemasons. Teddies for Loving Care provide huge numbers of cuddly bears to accident and emergency departments, hospital children's wards and children's hospices for staff to give to young patients. Karen Wright, Director of Care at the hospices, said, "We've received bears from Teddies for Loving Care before and it's been lovely to be able to give each seriously ill child who comes to the hospices their very own toy. The latest delivery will make sure we have enough bears for months to come and no one will miss out. Thank you all so much for thinking of us."
Number 28. Somerset. Joining the ranks. At the latest meeting of St. Alphege Lodge, the Assistant Grand Master, David Medlock, presented their newest member, Brother Doogie, with his Grand Lodge certificate. Doogie went on to deliver an exemplary piece of ritual and gave the visitor's toast at the festive board. Doogie was initiated into Canute Lodge, Southend-on-Sea, in January 2016, and passed in January 2017. He was raised on their behalf by St. Alphege Lodge in March 2022. Two new fellow crafts, brothers Dinos and Cam, were also passed. Brother Dinos, an undergraduate at the University of Bath, is from Cyprus, and Brother Cam, a postgrad student also at the University of Bath, is from Lebanon. St. Alphege Lodge is most fortunate to have a broad diversity of members and is proud to include the AGM as one of their own.
South Wales now. Widows' Sons have raised £1,000 for the RMBI Albert Edward Prince of Wales Court, Porthcawl. On Sunday the 25th of September, they held a ride from Aberdare to the RMBI. A cheque was presented to the care home manager, Alison Aberdeen, in the presence of the Provincial Grand Master, Right Worshipful Brother D. Gerald Rowbottom, accompanied by Worshipful Brother Philip Aubrey, Chairman of the Association of Friends of the Albert Edward Prince of Wales Court, and Worshipful Brother Philip Saunders, Provincial Grand Charity Steward. The money was raised by the widows' sons and their families from raffles held at various meetings and rides throughout the year, most notably the summer rally held at Simmons Yatt in Herefordshire. South Wales Provincial Grand Chapter is the representative association of the widows' sons within the province of South Wales.
Number 30. Staffordshire. Appliance of Science. More than 50 Freemasons descended on the Masonic Hall in Tettenhall, Wolverhampton, to witness the dedication of the banner for the Science Fiction and Fantasy Lodge, number 10,016. The worshipful master of the lodge, Chris Priestley, received the banner which was dedicated by John Lockley, provincial grand master for Staffordshire. The lodge makes use of items used in science fiction and fantasy culture, such as Gandalf's staff, lightsabers, and a Klingon batleth, or sword.
Surrey now, and the Athol lecture team visited Dorking Lodge number 1149. Hosted by worshipful master Bruce Bessinger, a super evening was enjoyed by all. A huge thank you to the lodge for presenting the team with a cheque for £250 towards the 2027 festival.
Number 32, Warwickshire. Lodge and Learn. A special installation took place at Shenstonian Lodge number 5544. As a school lodge affiliated with Solihull School, the immediate past headmaster, worshipful brother Phil Griffiths, installed his successor, David Lloyd, who coincidentally is also Phil's successor as headmaster of the school.
West Lancashire now. Preston Masonic Hall took part in this year's Heritage Open Days HOD programme. Not only was the hall open for the public to visit, but the Freemasons turned their ballroom over to Preston's local photographers to exhibit their images. All Freemasons were dressed in full regalia to give the visiting public a colourful experience, while tours were given by the Preston Group. In addition, the event was supported by Freemasonry for Women. Heritage Open Days is England's largest festival of history and culture, involving thousands of local volunteers and organisations. Every year in September, it brings people together to celebrate their heritage, community and history over a two-week period. Stories are told, traditions explored, and histories brought to life. It's a chance to see hidden places, to try out new experiences. These events are coordinated nationally by the National Trust and managed at a local level by a small Heritage Open Days team. Mayor of Preston, Councillor Neil Darby and his consort opened the event with some very warm words about the charitable activities of the Freemasons.
Number 34. West Kent. On tour. West Kent Masons completed a sponsored tour of Europe in a series of striking vehicles. The roughly 1,700-mile route took them from Dover to Calais, through Amsterdam, Frankfurt, Milan, Monaco, Lake Geneva, and back. The drive was in support of the Masonic Charitable Foundation, which strives to build better lives by enabling opportunity, advancing healthcare and education, and promoting independence for everyone. This is funded entirely by Freemasons.
Next, West Wales, and St. Padan Lodge, a university scheme lodge, attended the annual Aberystwyth University Freshers' Fair in September. The stall was run by Provincial Membership Officer Stephen Fern and Jenny Hewson from the Order of Women Freemasons, both ably supported by the lodge brethren and student society. There was a lot of engagement and discussions with potential candidates for both orders.
Number 36. Wiltshire. Roll call. The installation of new provincial Grand Master John Reed took place in Wiltshire. Members were pleased to welcome the newly invested Assistant Grand Master, Right Worshipful Brother David Medlock, a member of Lodge of Rectitude No. 335, and the UGLE team led by the Grand Director of Ceremonies. Congratulations to everyone receiving a promotion or appointment in Provincial Grand Lodge, including Ian Lever and Alan Coleman, the Provincial Senior Grand Warden and Junior Grand Warden.
Worcestershire. Four Worcestershire Freemasons have beaten the Three Peaks. Worshipful Master of Seven Lodge, Worshipful Brother Ricardo Serrano, along with Worshipful Brother Ben Maffei, Worshipful Brother Matt Davies and Brother Tom Minard, have triumphantly reached the summit of Snowdon, Ben Nevis and Scafell Pike. They had originally set a target of £1,000, which they would then donate to the 2022 fund. But already they've raised an amazing £2,140 and counting. Well done on an amazing job.
Number 38. Yorkshire North East Ridings. Support for York Women. The Master of St. Saviour Lodge of Installed Masters, Steve Helsden, presented a cheque for £500 to assist the work of the York Women's Counselling Service, YWCS. YWCS is a local charity that supports women who need help, with one-to-one counselling sessions for as long as they need them, regardless of their financial circumstances. During the evening, YWCS operations manager Charlotte Walton made a presentation to members and their partners who had gathered together to celebrate the lodge's 50th anniversary.
Yorkshire West Riding. Old Centralians AFC Leeds have been presented with a defibrillator thanks to a grant from West Yorkshire Freemasons. Established in 1925, Old Centralians AFC are an amateur football club and proud members of the West Yorkshire League and Yorkshire Amateur League. Located close to Headingley, Kirkstall and Horsforth, the club is run by volunteers to provide sport in the local community. The need for a defibrillator was identified when a player was taken ill during a game at the ground in West Park in Leeds, and there was an unacceptable delay in the arrival of an ambulance. Making the presentation was John Duncan, Master of Tatesall Lodge, number 7645, Pontefract, with Anthony Donnelly, Treasurer and Captain of the Football Club. West Riding Masonic Charities Limited made the grant of £1,500 from the Provincial Grand Masters Fund. The presentation coincided with a charity football match at the ground between Old Centralians and Rory's Rovers Football Club, a team formed following the sudden death of Rory Embling at the age of 26 after he suffered an undiagnosed cardiac arrhythmia. A charity was set up in his name, the Rory Embling Foundation Trust, in partnership with Cardiac Risk in the Young, with the aim of funding heart screenings for young people. A donation of £500 from Tatesall Lodge has contributed to the heart screening of 100 young people, and the charity match raised a further £100 in aid of the foundation. And also in the same area, Yorkshire West Riding recently held a raffle across the province, the first prize for which was a flight in a Spitfire at Biggin Hill. Worshipful Brother Ken Backhouse of Castleburg Lodge number 2091 in Settle, North Yorkshire, won the raffle but gave the prize to the lodge worshipful master Richard Farrer as a token of appreciation for safely holding the chair of King Solomon throughout lockdown. The raffle raised £20,000 for West Riding Masonic Charities. All this came from a generous donation from a respected Yorkshire Freemason.
Number 40. East Kent. Southern Hospitality. An East Kent Freemasons museum has played host to visiting Freemasons from Texas. On Sunday, the 4th of September 2022, 50 Freemasons and their partners from Texas, USA, arrived at the Kent Museum of Freemasonry in Canterbury. They were here in the UK on a Freemasons holiday. The Grand Lodge of the Republic of Texas held its first meeting in Houston on April the 16th, 1838. Now, Texas has more than 90,000 Freemasons and over 900 lodges. The party included Brad Billings, the Grand Master of Texas, who, at the age of 38, is believed to be the youngest in the United States. The group was welcomed to the museum and library by the Provincial Grand Master of East Kent, Neil Hamilton Johnston. The visitors were then taken on a tour of the museum by volunteers, and they were treated to a viewing of an Anderson's 1723 Book of Constitutions, together with a Coles Book of Constitutions. They also viewed some incredibly rare artefacts, including an Egyptian heavy maul, which has been confirmed by the British Museum as being genuine. Likely used in the creation of the tombs and the pyramids, it was found in a tomb in Luxor and is dated to between 3,000 and 2,500 years BC. The British Museum has stated that it is very rare indeed, and it is now registered with them. The guests were very taken with two English original Bibles, one being a 1588 Breeches Bible and the other a 1728 King James Bible. When first printed, a stock of the King James Bible was loaded onto the Mayflower and shipped to America. They rounded off their tour with a visit to the library that houses around 11,000 books on the history of Kent, including its heraldry and genealogy. Finally, the group then went next door for a tour of the Canterbury Masonic Centre. During this visit, Freemasons learnt that in Texas, the Grand Master serves only 1 year in office, and during his year, he is responsible for more than 100,000 members. They do not have bars in their centres, as alcohol is very much frowned upon, and they do not allow female Freemasons, although women can join the Order of the Eastern Star, a Masonic appendant body open to both men and women. With time marching on, they departed for Canterbury, the cathedral being their next guided tour, where they would see further examples of Masonic history.
Page 36 starts the stories section. People, places, history and more. And there are two stories in this section. First, on Something for Everyone, Freemasons Hall welcomes the public to its open house event, and then Gentlemen and Scholars, the Open University alumni who founded Omnium Lodge. So the first of those two stories is an open invitation. Special interest lodges, a kids' trail and live music were all part of a package of attractions for visitors to Freemasons Hall during the Open House Festival 2022 back in September. Visitors to Freemasons Hall during the Open House Festival 2022 were once again able to experience one of the finest Art Deco buildings in London. It was built as a peace memorial to Freemasons who died in World War I, so it seemed fitting that visitors enjoyed an immersive World War I experience, along with live music and cocktails created exclusively for the weekend. There was also the opportunity to speak to members of special interest Masonic lodges, focusing on classic cars, football, beer and rugby. At the World War I camp scene, visitors met a group of reenactors portraying the first aid nursing yeomanry and Scottish horse yeomanry, alongside displays of medical equipment and artifacts from the era. They also got the chance to learn some semaphore and listen to pipers playing rousing music that once led soldiers out of the trenches. In addition, they discovered how modern-day Freemasons practice Freemasonry and how the building is still used for its original purpose. Members in Masonic regalia were also available to chat to the public over the 2 days. For younger visitors, a children's trail was a fun way to identify beautiful architecture throughout the building, such as the scenes depicted in the stunning stained glass windows. They could also make and take home bright bricks, figures of a dragon, a throne and unicorn, all of which can be found among the architecture of the hall. During the weekend, there were tours of the magnificent Grand Temple and a short film about Freemasonry. The Order of Women Freemasons also had a stand in the vestibules where they shared their experience of female Freemasonry. As a treat, visitors could take an exclusive peek at two lodge rooms that are seldom seen by the general public, including the spectacular Lodge Room No. 10, known to London Freemasons as the Egyptian Room, which serves as the meeting place for some of the capital's largest lodges. The Museum of Freemasonry was also a must-see attraction for many visitors. Here, they could view one of the world's largest collection of artifacts associated with Freemasonry, including Sir Winston Churchill's apron and the large throne made for the future King George IV, who was Grand Master from 1790 to 1813. Elsewhere, the public enjoyed live music at the new cafe and bar at Freemasons Hall, where Emma Stevens sang a mixture of pop, folk and country music. Two unique cocktails were created especially for the Open House Festival, the Temple, a gin-based drink with fresh citrus notes, and the Ashley & Newman, a vodka-based cocktail with the bright colour and flavour of raspberries. After a memorable visit, anyone who wanted a souvenir of their day could choose from Masonic and Art Deco-inspired jewellery, scarves, ties and more at the shop at Freemasons Hall.
On page 38... Lodge of Learning. Like Freemasonry, the Open University is a beacon for those seeking self-improvement. Now, a new lodge called Omnium aims to bind the two together. When the Open University, OU, was founded in 1969, it was along principles that any Freemason would surely applaud. This was a university open to anyone in search of knowledge and self-improvement, an educational establishment with no barriers around class, race, or religion. This pioneering approach has enabled millions of people to obtain qualifications that have transformed lives and broadened minds. Among them, Cheshire Freemason Mike Steggles, who took an OU degree in Earth Science for fun. As Mike browsed the online offerings for OU students, he noticed that there were associations covering almost every imaginable leisure pursuit, anything from an amateur radio society to one for yoga lovers, but there was nothing for Freemasons. While discussing this on a train to London with fellow Freemason Paul Crudge, Omnium Lodge, the lodge for the Open University, was born. I told Paul that I was surprised there wasn't a university lodge for the OU, and wouldn't it be great to have one, says Mike. By the time we got to London, we agreed to do it. The idea was a showstopper, says Paul, who, with Mike, had been part of the team that founded the University Lodge of Chester, so he had some knowledge of the university scheme. Following consultation with the province, an email was sent in 2018 to Freemasons in Cheshire and neighbouring provinces to gauge interest. We'd done some basic maths based on the number of OU students and realised there must be a large number of existing Freemasons with OU connections, says Paul. We were getting hundreds of emails from people just in the northwest who were interested. Omnium Lodge, Omnium means belonging to all, was consecrated in November 2021 at Freemasons Hall in Cristleton, outside Chester. It attracted Freemasons from across Cheshire, including then-Deputy Provincial Grandmaster David Dyson, who has just followed Mike into the chair at Omnium Lodge as Worshipful Master and is also Cheshire's new Provincial Grandmaster. I want to see Omnium flourish and become a significant lodge for the province and the wider constitution, he says. We know that there is significant potential for the large number of men with connections to the Open University who might wish to swell our numbers, whether as initiates or joining members. I am delighted to be in a position as Worshipful Master to see us harness that potential. One of those present was Kishore Balgobin, a Freemason since 1995. Kishore is a nurse and former OU student who completed his degree in sociology and psychology in 1987. He was delighted to see so many fellow Freemasons had hitherto unknown OU connections. I saw an email about the lodge from the Provincial Grand Lodge asking for founding members, and I knew I would find like-minded people, he says. I hadn't met any OU students since I finished my course, so when I went to the first meeting, I was pleasantly surprised to see so many Freemasons I knew from other lodges on the Wirral. I had no idea they were OU graduates. The OU, like Freemasonry, takes people from all walks of life, with no geographical, cultural or religious boundaries. It transcends all prejudice. Kishore, who is Omnium Lodge's charity steward, was born in Mauritius before moving to the UK. He believes the OU gave him an educational opportunity that would have otherwise been impossible. It's this spirit that makes the OU and Freemasonry such a fine fit. I'm a big fan of the OU and think that a lot of people doing an OU degree would get a lot out of Freemasonry and a lot of Freemasons would get a lot out of the Open University, says Mike. We can bring Freemasonry to OU students and we can bring knowledge and learning to Freemasons. Omnium Lodge has initiated its first Freemasons and currently meets twice a year. The plan is to draw numbers not just from among existing Freemasons with OU connections, but to recruit new Freemasons from the OU population, much like any other university lodge. One new Freemason is Lewis Chambers, the lodge's first candidate. Lewis, an undergraduate of the Open University, was initiated into Omnium Lodge at an emergency meeting on the 29th of June 2022. He was due to be initiated in April, but the lodge had to postpone the ceremony due to the arrival of his baby daughter the night before. He feels that Omnium Lodge in particular suits his requirements, in that he will be in a community and network of fellow alumni of the Open University. He's really looking forward to meeting up with other members to discuss mutual Open University topics and experiences. One in 30 men in the UK has a connection to the OU, offering a vast potential pool of members. Omnium's founding team has created a Freemasons club through the online OU Student Association that they use to raise awareness, recruit new Freemasons, and allow Freemasons and OU students located outside the Northwest to learn about the new lodge. Inquiries from female students are also welcomed, with Omnium forging links with the Order of Women Freemasons, and inviting a representative to pre-consecration founders' meetings. This is a lodge with huge ambitions, and the founders have been quick to grasp the potential of aligning with a vast, virtual organization such as the OU. When you think about that, this is a lodge that could have thousands of members, says Paul. Mike outlines a long-term plan that would see the lodge satisfy potential regional demand by traveling to different provinces rather than be located solely in the Northwest. Alternatively, this could be the first in an interconnected family of regional OU lodges. Another advantage of being part of the university scheme network is that interested candidates or existing Freemasons unable to get to Chester for meetings can be directed towards a local lodge. There are all sorts of possibilities as to what people can do when they get in touch with us, says Mike. A lot of OU students are of university age, and we can put them in touch with young people through the university scheme, especially if they are not based in the Northwest, and we can point them in the direction of their nearest university lodge. Once you join the university scheme family, it opens all sorts of doors. The scheme has been going for a while, so there's a lot of knowledge that we can draw on and adopt. The OU pioneered the concept of distance learning, but has its own physical campus for residential courses. Similarly, while most OU student associations started life as virtual organizations, many of them now hold regular in-person meetings. This sets a precedent for Freemasons and bodes well for the future of Omnium Lodge. Mike believes the lodge is opening a new frontier for Freemasonry, one that might take a more flexible geographical approach to the traditional concept of a local lodge. "We are breaking new ground, there's no doubt about it," says Mike. "It won't be plain sailing, but I'm confident we will become very successful as we evolve."
Page 45 starts the daily advancement session. Three articles. First, Prince Hall Freemasonry. Dr. Rick Berman uncovers the origins of African Lodge. Then, Relief in Times of Distress, a moving tale of charity that captures its enduring appeal. And then, Sovereign Grants, royal donations to the Museum of Freemasonry. Starting then with freedom and fraternity. A prominent leader and proponent of the abolition of slavery in the 1700s, Prince Hall founded a form of Freemasonry that is practiced across the United States to this day. Relatively few English Freemasons are aware of the connection between the Grand Lodge of England and Prince Hall Freemasonry. The origin of African Lodge, the United States' first black Masonic lodge, dates to 1778 and to Prince Hall, dated 1738 to 1807, his lifespan was, and he was a prominent black leader in Boston, Massachusetts. Hall was a staunch proponent of equal treatment for black people and the abolition of slavery and the slave trade. His connection to Freemasonry began when he and 14 other free black men were initiated on the 6th of March 1775 by Sergeant John Batt and formed African Lodge No. 1. Batt was a member of Lodge No. 441, Irish Constitution, which was attached to the 38th Regiment of Foot in the British Army. At that time, the regiment was stationed in Boston. In common with most American lodges, African Lodge met sporadically during the U.S. War of Independence. Post-war, Hall sought to legitimize its status with recognition from other Boston lodges. They declined, either through racism or because they viewed African Lodge as irregular. Frustrated, Hall petitioned the Grand Lodge of England for a warrant with the help of William Moody, Master of the Lodge of Brotherly Love, No. 55, in London. The arrangements are set out in a letter and petition sent by Hall to Moody. It reads, "Dear brother, I would inform you that this lodge has been founded almost this 8 years, and had no warrant yet, but only a permit from Grandmaster Rowe to walk on St. John's days and to bury our dead in form, which we now enjoy. We've had no opportunity until now of applying for a warrant, though we were pressed upon to send to France for one, but we refused it for reasons best known to ourselves. We now apply to the fountain from whom we receive lights for this favour, and, dear sir, I must beg you to be our advocate for us by sending this, our request, to His Royal Highness the Duke of Cumberland, Grand Master, and to the Right Honourable Earl of Effingham, Acting Grand Master, the Deputy Grand Master and Grand Wardens, and the rest of the brethren of the Grand Lodge, that they would graciously be pleased to grant us a charter to hold this lodge as long as we behave up to the spirit of the Constitution. This, our humble petition, we hope His Highness and the rest of the Grand Lodge will graciously be pleased to grant us there, though poor yet sincere brethren of the craft. And therefore, in duty bound ever to pray, I beg leave to subscribe myself to your loving friend and brother, Prince Hall, Master of the African Lodge No. 1, June the 30th, 1784, in the year of Masonry 5784, in the name of the whole lodge. And it was signed at the bottom, C. Underwood, Secretary. The petition was passed to Grand Lodge and accepted, and African Lodge obtained a charter remarkably quickly on the 29th of September 1784, and was entered into the Grand Register as number 459. Despite various delays, the warrant was received in Boston on the 29th of April, 1787, and African Lodge met a week later on the 6th of May, 1787. UGLE's archives hold a stream of letters that flowed from Boston to London, beginning in 1785 with Hall's formal letter of thanks to the Duke of Cumberland. Between 1787 and 1789, Hall's letters to Deputy Grand Master Roland Holt and Grand Secretary William White update Grand Lodge with details of initiations, expulsions and deaths. There were also donations to the Grand's charity and a copy of African Lodge's general regulations. Most letters are written by Hall personally from his rooms at the Sign of the Golden Fleece on Water Street in Boston. After the merger of the Ancients and Moderns Grand Lodges in Massachusetts on the 5th of March 1792, African Lodge became the only lodge in Massachusetts that had been constituted by and remained subordinate to the Grand Lodge of England. Unrecognised by any other lodge in Massachusetts, African Lodge regarded itself, and was considered by London, as an English constitution lodge. This was sanctioned formally at the April 1792 quarterly communication of the Grand Lodge of England. African Lodge was renumbered number 370 in 1792 and continued to correspond with London until at least 1797. The lodge remained on the Grand Register until 1813, when creation of the United Grand Lodge of England led to the wholesale erasure of lodges with which London deemed it had lost contact. Ironically, African Lodge was unaware that it had been renumbered and was no longer part of the Grand Register, and in 1824 wrote to London petitioning for the renewal of its charter. The letter noted that while no dues had been sent for some years due to mismanagement, these would now be sent across, including the fee for a replacement warrant. As worshipful master of African Lodge No. 459, Hall initiated many men of colour into Freemasonry. In March 1797, he constituted a sister lodge in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to work under 459's charter, and in June that year warranted another at Providence, Rhode Island, on the same basis. He died in 1807. 2 decades later, African Lodge declared itself to be an independent Grand Lodge with the name African Grand Lodge of Massachusetts. It was later renamed to Prince Hall Grand Lodge of Massachusetts, and it is from this organisation that most Prince Hall Grand Lodges are descended. In the 20th and 21st centuries, many of America's black community leaders emerged from the church, business, sport and entertainment, but they also sprang from Prince Hall Freemasonry, with its combination of enlightenment principles, spirituality and mutuality. While the organization is predominantly African American, members have joined from other culturally diverse backgrounds, and Prince Hall Freemasonry has become part of the core of black communities across the United States. That is Prince Hall's Masonic legacy.
On page 48, an act of goodwill. Charity has been an enduring principle for many generations of Freemasons. Dr. Rick Berman tells the story of support behind a Victorian Masonic print. A common thread that binds all Freemasonry is charity. It is not just a feature of modern Freemasonry, but dates back to the medieval and religious guilds that predated them. Perhaps one of the most moving and enduring examples goes back to the mid-Victorian period. Blossom and Decay was published as a print by E. Warden and Co. of Holborn, London. Copies were sold to raise funds to support the widow and four children of the engraver J.K. DeFeo. The print was dedicated to Thomas Dundas, the 2nd Earl of Zetland, Grand Master of the English Grand Lodge from 1843 to 69, and features the Masonic square and compasses. J.K. DeFeo was not an artist but a merchant, originally from Hungary but since naturalized British, who died prematurely in 1862, having been imprisoned for debt in the Fleet Prison from June to August 1861. Following his release, Brother DeFeo was granted £20 assistance from the Board of Benevolence in November 1861. His claim states that he was a Scottish Freemason, that he provided a lodge certificate dated 2nd of March 1856 from Rose and Thistle Lodge No. 73, Glasgow, and that he was a merchant and Austrian agent. Following a series of misfortunes, he had been reduced to absolute poverty with no means to support his wife and four children aged 8, 7, 4 and 11 months. His death a few months later in June 1862 left his widow and children destitute and for some years dependent on charity. It was in this context that details of the print were published in the Freemasons Monthly Magazine on the 26th of July 1862 under the heading A Distressing Case.
And there on page 48 is a replica of this drawing, Blossom and Decay by J.K. DeFeo. And it shows two children at an archway or a windowsill or something similar, drawn in such a way that close up you see these two children, the windowsill and the arch and the sky behind them. But if you look at a distance, it looks like a skull with the two children's heads as the two eye sockets. And a little small tree they have on the windowsill is the triangle of the nose. And a couple of cups and beakers and blocks on the windowsill would be the teeth of the top row of teeth of the skull. It is a quite remarkable artistic optical illusion. Next we come to By Royal Request. While researching his 2022 Prestonian lecture, John Hawkins, together with collections manager Emma Roberts, discovered a selection of precious royal gifts to the Museum of Freemasonry. In reviewing archive material at the Museum of Freemasonry for the 2022 Prestonian lecture, The Royal Family and Freemasonry, a copy of a letter dated 21st of March 1950 came to light from Sidney White, UGLE Grand Secretary, to His Majesty King George VI as follows. I have to inform Your Majesty that the Grand Master has handed me the glass goblet and tumbler which Your Majesty has graciously presented to Grand Lodge on permanent loan. They are at once being placed in one of the cases in the museum, which is visited by a constantly increasing number of people. The museum's collection contains items given or loaned by the royal family over a period of almost two centuries, including the spectacular Sussex plate candelabrum on display in the South Gallery. However, the two pieces referred to in the letter as well as some porcelain given by King George V and Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, are less well known. The story of this glass begins on the 26th of April 1948, the occasion of the silver wedding of King George VI and Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother. One of the gifts was a tumbler inset into the base of which were three loose dice. Known as a gaming tumbler, this example probably dates to the second half of the 19th century and is decorated with emblems, some of which are obviously Masonic and others less so. The king asked his private secretary, Michael Adeen, to seek further information from Heron Lepper, the librarian and curator at Great Queen Street, via the Grand Secretary. Heron Lepper's response to the Grand Secretary was not particularly enthusiastic, noting that the museum had several similar specimens, although this was of a larger size than normal, that it was fairly modern, probably of Bohemian origin, and of rather rough workmanship with several flaws. White's reply to Adeen has not survived, but may have been slightly more enthusiastic. Heron Lepper's description of the symbols was attached to his response. Presumably the king must have been satisfied with the reply, and there the matter was left for the time being. A year or so later, however, Adeen made another inquiry on behalf of the king. This arose in a roundabout way. In 1948, a publication titled Antiques Review had been launched. The leading article in the first issue was Flint Glass in the Collection of His Majesty the King by G. Bernard Hughes. He had been permitted to inspect the king's private collection of old English table glass at Buckingham Palace and to take several photographs that were reproduced in the article. One item was described as follows. The capacious Masonic rummer has a thinly blown bowl, its field elaborately engraved with a long series of Masonic emblems. The short stem, with a round knop and a strengthening collar below the bowl, is typical of three-piece rummers made after 1790. The following year, Kenneth Olliott wrote an article on Masonic glass in The Freemasons Magazine and Rectangular Review. He reproduced the photograph of the goblet that had appeared in the article by Hughes, noting that it had been described by Hughes, and added, "The fine workmanship, artistic engraving, and artistic conception of the whole goblet makes fair comparison with the ewer and four goblets deposited in the Grand Lodge Museum by the Royal Arch Chapter of St. James, attached to the Lodge of Antiquity. One of the most historically interesting and artistically satisfying engraved goblets known to the Masonic world. This goblet of the Georgian period is in the collection of His Majesty the King. The choice of symbols is unusual for a glass of this period, and the proportions of the geometric figures blend well with the general lines of the goblet. The simple foot is typical of goblets of this period." Whether the workmanship is really up to the same standard as the Chapter of St. James pieces is arguable, but the author was certainly impressed. This article gave rise to another letter on the 7th of July 1949 from Adeen to Sidney White. "You may have noticed a picture of a glass Masonic goblet which belongs to the king on page 13 of the Freemasons Magazine, number 654, volume 3. His Majesty did not know that he possessed this interesting piece of glass, but it has now come to light. We have absolutely no information about it, except that it has got a great piece of paper stuck to it, on which is typed English 1820. The king is much interested in this goblet, and is anxious to find out something of its history. Would it be possible for you, with your usual kindness, to arrange for someone at Grand Lodge to have a look at it and give their opinion? I could easily have it sent down to you, or bring it myself." Once again, Heron Lepper was asked to provide an opinion, and his response included a description of the symbols. Despite being an enthusiastic collector of glass, the king must subsequently have felt that the best place for both pieces was the museum, and there they remain to this day. The king died in February 1952, and later that year, while still in mourning, Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, visited Freemasons Hall for a tour hosted by the Earl of Scarborough, Grand Master. She wrote to thank the Grand Master and gave the museum another piece from the king's private collection as a permanent memorial to him, this time a Chinese porcelain punch bowl. It would not be an exaggeration to say that this piece, probably dating from the late 18th century, has seen better days. Its decoration is heraldic rather than Masonic, with the royal arms for Scotland on the front and the jewel of the Knights of the Thistle on the back. The Order of the Thistle is a chivalric order associated with Scotland, the current version having been founded in 1687 by King James VII of Scotland, James II of England, who asserted that he was reviving an earlier order. This was not the first gift of porcelain to the museum by the royal family. In 1934, not long after Freemasons Hall was opened, a tour hosted by the Duke of Connaught, then Grand Master, was made by King George V and Queen Mary. Following their visit, along with their thanks, the king sent as a gift two punch bowls of Quanlong export porcelain of about 1780. The smaller has some damage, but the larger one is in very good condition, and both have similar decoration, much of it resembling that on the glass goblet described above. There are also some additional emblems, and both feature superimposed working tools, an idea later adopted by Reynolds Stone in his winning design for King George VI's peace stamp. See Freemasonry Today magazine's Spring 2022 issue for that. These five pieces are not the largest or most splendid in the museum's collection, but their impeccable provenance makes them among the most treasured. And also on this page, as an addendum to the article, it says, Wanted, £100 reward. In 1869 and 1870, Sigismund Rosenthal created two paintings showing respectively the reception of His Royal Highness Prince of Wales as past Grand Master of the Craft and at a grand conclave of Knights Templar. Autotype prints of these paintings were advertised regularly by George Kenning in the Freemason between 1870 and 1873. The original of the former hangs in Freemasons Hall, and prints, sometimes coloured, are quite commonly encountered. The whereabouts of the original of the latter is unknown, and various print collections, including the Museum of Freemasonry, the Victoria and Albert and British Museums, and the Royal Collection Trust, do not list copies in their catalogues. If you know where a copy or the original can be found, please let us know at FMT, and we will donate £100 to a charity of your choice. Now we come to the Grand Lodge section. This is news from Great Queen Street, and there's one article in the section this time, Pathways Progress, where four provinces share their experience of the Members Pathway.
After the launch of the Members Pathway 2.0, we catch up with four provincial Grand Masters to find out that it has been invaluable in re-engaging the membership. The first piece is from Neil Connolly, PGM for Hertfordshire, and it's titled, Every Journey Starts with the First Step. One of the first instructions we receive during the ceremony of initiation is to step off with your left foot. And so begins our Masonic journey. However, traditionally, or should I say habitually, our journey from that point can vary immensely. We progress through the first three degrees, take up appointments as lodge officers, eventually becoming master of the lodge. Many join the Royal Arch, and perhaps in due course, move on to the other orders, where they enjoy the varied ritual and conviviality associated with that particular journey. However, the pressures of the ever-changing pace in modern-day life, especially over the past 25 years, have resulted in all too many becoming disillusioned, their progress and interest wane, and they are lost to Freemasonry. Lodges are often surprised when a member resigns, believing it was their individual choice rather than one that was influenced by their Masonic experience within their lodge. The Chinese word for crisis comprises two symbols. The first is danger, and the second, opportunity. Many lodges are still coming to terms with recent losses, and their numbers have become perilously low. However, the number of initiates in the past year has exceeded expectations and bodes well for some. As an organization, we still lose approximately a fifth of our initiates within 3 years of their initiation. The members' pathway seeks to provide a structure that enables lodges to review themselves in terms of planning how they wish to be perceived, how they attract new members, then engage and support them. Then, where this has not fully worked out, there's guidance on how to try and retrieve a member in the initial stages when they are seeking to resign. The challenge is twofold. Realizing the dangers of when the lodge experience does not align with the expectation of the members, then seizing the opportunity that the structure of the members' pathway offers to address this. The survival of a species is not determined by its intelligence or strength, but by its ability to adapt to change. In Hertfordshire Freemasonry, we carried out a province-wide launch of the members' pathway, offering guidance and support to lodges who wished to engage with it. Needless to say, there was a varied response, ranging from those who have fully embraced the concept to those that decided to keep things as they are. There are three types of lodges: those that are struggling, those that are striving and thriving, and those that are strong. For the next year, we have chosen to focus on the 35% of lodges who have enthusiastically engaged with the members' pathway, in whatever category they fall, and to work with them to embrace the principles it contains. There is no denying that in a province of 180 lodges, the resources required to assist all cannot be met overnight. However, as the appointment of lodge mentors and membership officers grows, we have seen the green shoots of the necessary adaptive change begin to flourish, thereby ensuring a strong future for our members and for our organisation.
The next piece is from John Thompson, the Provincial Grand Master of Durham. "Don't just be a member of the province, be a part of it," he says. The launch of the updated members' pathway in September 2021 coincided with the restart of Freemasonry after the COVID lockdown. At first glance, it looked complex and felt like yet another initiative requiring even more from provinces, lodges and chapters. Under the strapline of attracting members, growing lodges, provinces were asked to develop strategies to deliver the members' pathway. There was a request for lodges to appoint lodge membership officers, although this was at a time when some were struggling to re-engage their membership. It started to feel like overload. However, a deeper dive into the members' pathway and a considered look at how it can help has led to a change in attitude in Durham towards understanding the potential of these resources. Far from being a complex web of directions demanding us to adopt certain strategies, the Members Pathway resource in b.ugle.org.uk is a repository of good practice from which we can all learn. It gives us an opportunity to stop, take stock and reflect on where we are now and where we want to go. The scheme has been a catalyst at provincial level to reorganise and modernise. We're learning new ways to support our lodges, chapters and members to re-engage and enjoy their Freemasonry once more. As units become smaller, we need to ensure every member feels part of not only their lodge or chapter, but something bigger, their province and Freemasonry in general. It's vital we explain why the members' pathway is important. It's not just about falling membership. If that was the case, we'd all have acted by now. In the post-COVID era, re-engaging the membership, connecting members to their lodges, chapters and to their communities, and actively demonstrating support from our provincial team is how we plan to attract members back to our units. Growing lodges is not just about increasing numbers, it's about how much enjoyment we get out of our Freemasonry and taking satisfaction from the good that we do in our communities. This is something we can all take pleasure from. Durham's response will not be a task-oriented one of pushing lodges to appoint membership officers and pinning a badge on members' pathway officers, but one of a gradual shift towards our ultimate goals. By explaining how the members' pathway can help lodges and move them towards true engagement, we're more likely to effect the change we're looking for. Our provincial team of membership officers, mentors, learning and development, almoners and grand stewards, lodge has started to grow with a shared purpose. For the province of Durham, the members' pathway is about positive change that will lead to increased involvement and enjoyment of our members, their lodges and families. We look forward to seeing how we grow.
The third piece is by Mark Constant, PGM for Northamptonshire and Huntingdonshire, and it's titled A Members' Pathway Reflection. As I take up the reins of the province, I reflect that during my time as Assistant Provincial Grand Master, I was responsible for the implementation of the members' pathway. This has proved to be very useful as I now map out the province's future, with the prime objective of seeing Freemasonry thrive. Achieving this aim requires attracting members and ensuring they are positively engaged with our work and their fellow members, so they enjoy their Freemasonry. As a consequence, we retain their interest as active members over the long term. Working closely with our provincial Grand Membership Officer, Worshipful Brother John Ferguson, our focus in the early days of the original members' pathway in 2018 was not to try and implement the whole individual steps strategy. The feeling was that this would be problematic to apply across the province. We therefore decided to focus on the key elements: attraction, engagement, and retention. There were challenges, such as impressing upon our members the importance of the members' pathway, making clear how success depends upon each member contributing, as well as overcoming the natural resistance to change. Following a consultation period across the province with senior members and identifying where good practice was happening, we focused on these areas and individual lodges that, in some manner, mirrored the members' pathway. These were presented to the wider membership as best practice, aligned with the new strategy. The rollout of the updated members' pathway in 2021, with a cake-baking theme, was not initially well received. However, it did, in its own way, publicise the new framework. Consequently, when the refined literature, including the excellent model now used, was presented, it was professional, clearly understood, and has found much more acceptance across the province. To demonstrate the importance of the members' pathway and its implementation, our provincial membership working party has members of my executive in charge of each of the key elements. Responsibility for its implementation is then cascaded through our group officer scheme, with one single point of contact for each group, ensuring local meetings across the province can take place between our provincial membership and mentoring officers and the group officers responsible for the members' pathway. This approach means the members' pathway is disseminated by senior members who are accountable for its implementation and regularly communicate back to the centre. This approach has evolved, but we have always been single-minded about clear communication on the important messages and the overarching objective of creating a happy, vibrant, and growing membership. We are open to changing and fine-tuning our approach while signalling through our actions the importance of the members' pathway model. Having created a knowledgeable senior team, from the executive through to our group officers, we have demonstrated its importance and built a support structure that can ensure the next phase of the rollout is successful as we start appointing individual lodge membership officers.
And the fourth and final person in this article is James Ross, Provincial Grand Master for West Wales. Progress is impossible without change, and those who cannot change their minds cannot change anything, writes George Bernard Shaw. I'm not certain that George Bernard Shaw was thinking about the members' pathway when he wrote those words, but they aptly summarised the challenges we faced in 2019. The initial members' pathway and the updated version 2.0 have sought to define exactly how to keep our lodges relevant and healthy. In West Wales, we launched the original to our lodges in 2019 and the update over the last 12 months. The first launch included in-person meetings in each of our three counties. They were well attended and lively, with the membership team delivering presentations with Q&As. However, not every aspect of the members' pathway was welcomed with open arms. Particularly controversial were the ideas that lodges might have a social media presence to attract new members, and that a small regular interviewing committee might replace trial by every past master, which was especially popular in some lodges. We followed our launch meetings with interactive workshops where we asked lodges to share what had worked for them. Much to our surprise, we discovered that some of the loudest critics of the members' pathway had set up social media sites and formed small interviewing committees. In one case, the social media site that originally the lodge didn't want or need had immediately attracted three new candidates. Perfect news for an interactive workshop. Traction for the members' pathway wasn't lost during the pandemic, but the momentum we had worked so hard to achieve certainly was. Fortunately, while we were doing quizzes on Zoom, the pathway working party was remodelling the members' pathway ready for a relaunch. I appointed Steve Fern to be our first collared provincial membership officer and asked him to sort out the relaunch. Steve, who works at Aberystwyth University, started with a Zoom meeting for lodge membership teams to explain the importance of what was going to happen. Since then, he's been contacting every lodge membership team on a fortnightly basis to introduce a different aspect of the members' pathway. Steve quite rightly identified that the modular nature of the new material lends itself to short, sharp, and most importantly, regular and ongoing communication. We still give presentations about the members' pathway to individual lodges, and the provincial membership team is always available to help. But Steve's innovative ideas are already making a difference. Our challenge now is to maintain the focus on membership in our lodges. There is complacency in some places and an unwillingness to change in other. But West Wales is certainly heading in the right direction. The next section, and page 63, is the Royal Arch. This is Thoughts from the Supreme Grand Chapter. And it has one article in it, A Deeper Understanding. It's a Q&A with Pro First Grand Principal Jonathan Spence.
Pro Grand Master and Pro First Grand Principal Jonathan Spence reflects on how his time as a companion has enriched his experience of Freemasonry. Do you remember your exaltation? When and where did it take place? I joined the Royal Arch in 1984, 2 years after I was initiated into the craft. I was exalted into Pentangle Chapter number 1174 in the province of East Kent, and I remain a subscribing companion to this day. Like all first ceremonies, I have a vivid recollection of some parts of the ceremony and other parts fitted into place while watching others being exalted later, but certain moments have stayed with me just under 40 years later at the time of writing. I still very much enjoy seeing new companions go through their exaltation ceremony, and I especially enjoy catching up with them afterwards to hear their immediate reaction. How important has the Royal Arch been for you during your time as a Freemason? Very important. My time as a companion has allowed me to experience a new dimension to my Freemasonry, be that through the beautiful exaltation ceremony, new friendships as my mother chapter draws candidates from three craft lodges, or a better understanding of what it means to be a Freemason. I became MEZ, the Royal Arch equivalent of Worshipful Master, of Pentangle in 1994, and found that, just like the craft, this position of leadership within the chapter provided a new perspective. What advice would you give to a newly exalted companion? My first piece of advice would be to see an exaltation ceremony from the view of a spectator rather than as a participant. You will undoubtedly have heard the same after your initiation, and it really shouldn't be underestimated how much you will gain in understanding the place of the Royal Arch and of the ceremony from seeing someone else go through the same experience. Second, make sure that you aren't stretching yourself too thinly by taking on several roles in too short a space of time. It is important that everyone does it at a pace that suits their individual circumstances. the most important thing is to enjoy it. We know that the new strategy applies to both the craft and the Royal Arch. Why has the decision been taken to make it a unified strategy? The English Constitution is unique in the fact that the Royal Arch is an integral part of our Masonic experience, and the strong links between English craft Freemasonry and the history of the Royal Arch in our Constitution are well documented. The undeniable and intrinsic link between the two means that it is imperative for us to move forward with a coherent, integrated plan for both the craft and Royal Arch. This way, we can make sure that Freemasonry within the English Constitution remains as special and unique as it always has been. Coherence is absolutely the key in this case, and the new strategy reflects that. What are your priorities for the Royal Arch going forward as pro-First Grand Principal? I would like to empower Freemasons who are not yet members of the Royal Arch to find out more about it. There is a lot of work going on behind the scenes to help us improve on describing the Royal Arch, having a compelling narrative that explains it and its importance to members. Be it the striking ceremony or the fascinating history included within, there is undoubtedly something for all Freemasons to enjoy and appreciate. The more Freemasons who can experience this extension to their journey as Freemasons, the better off we will all be for it. What advice would you give to a Master Mason who is unsure about whether he should join the Royal Arch? Master Masons are often under pressure to do all sorts of things next. I would strongly encourage them, when the time is right for them to do something more in Freemasonry, to talk to their Royal Arch representative or to attend one of the many Master Masons evenings that are held in several provinces and districts. Perhaps best of all, talk to one of your friends who is wearing the Royal Arch jewel. I have heard it said that a Freemason should wait until they have served as worshipful master of a craft lodge before they join the Royal Arch. I do disagree with this approach, and had been a member of the Royal Arch for 5 years by the time I became the worshipful master of Sir Joseph Williamson Lodge, number 4605. I have no regrets about this choice.
The four book reviews this issue are Freemasonry, Theory of the Origins by Fabio Venzi, Alternative Masonic Addresses for the Craft Degrees, edited by Philippa Folks, Logic Working of Craft Ceremonies, the Logic Ritual Association, and The Full Spectrum of Freemasonry by Richard L. Gann. So we start off with the first one. A different angle, an interesting look at how it all started. This is the Freemasonry Theory of the Origins by Fabio Venzi, review by Robert Jags Fowler. In this book, writes Robert, Fabio Venzi has produced a learned and plausible account of the origins of Freemasonry. As a starting point, he takes the view that Freemasonry started in England. Venzi considers three theories as to how and why it developed, indicating that the passage of time allowed the three theories to have a short-lived link in terms of evolving into the system we know today. His first theory of Homo ludens draws on the importance of a play element in the development of culture and society. He recognises that the growth of Freemasonry in the early 18th century followed the ritual dramas seen in English public theatre in the 16th and 17th centuries, particularly the mystery and morality plays. As a result, he raises doubts about connections to cathedral stonemasons' guilds. According to his first theory, Freemasonry arose from little more than a desire for socialising and entertainment. The second theory focuses on the invention of tradition and the idea that tradition is brought about to strengthen national bonds, unquote, through the creation of something that should appear to be so ancient as to have no memory, unquote. This occurred during the 18th century through a process of ritualization, formalization, the use of symbols, and referring to the past. The final theory is the journey from morals to mysticism, whereby Freemasonry developed from a simple ethico-moral pathway to a spiritual and conscientious pathway of enhancement, epitomised in the rituals of the Royal Arch. For those wishing to delve deeper into the possible origins of Freemasonry, this book is certain to be of interest. And once again, that was reviewed by Robert Jaggs Fowler. The book is Freemasonry, Theory of the Origins by Fabio Venzi, and it's available from Lewis Masonic, 241 pages, price £21.
The second book review is for Alternative Masonic Addresses for the Craft Degrees, edited by Philippa Fulks, and the review is by Reginald Church. A very handy book. Obscure addresses now easy to find. Although this pocket-sized book has been available for a few years, not many people seem to know about it, which is a pity. It pulls together all sorts of additional and alternative addresses in one volume and is a useful book to have on the shelf. Some of the material, such as the longer second-degree working tools, can be found buried away towards the back of some ritual books, but by no means all. Other pieces, however, such as the Walking Charge or the Lodge of Sorrow, are even harder to hunt down and might only be very rarely witnessed, if at all. Moreover, those lodges that do have one or two of these alternative and extra addresses in their repertoire may well have previously relied on some tired photocopy handed down over the years. Now, at long last, anyone can obtain these interesting texts for themselves. Other addresses I would imagine most readers have never heard of, or at best only briefly overheard vague hints of while going off to dinner, include an address to the organist, an alternative address to the stewards, and a longer explanation of the third degree tracing board. As well as these, there is the Initiate's Chain, an address for transferring a hallstone jewel, and a rather interesting short talk about Ecclesiastes chapter 12. These are just a handful to show the flavour of the book. There are more than 25 in all. The only footling error I spotted was the recently obsolete toast to the Queen and the craft, but that is hardly a reason for not buying this useful book. Future editions will doubtless have the up-to-date wording.
And that book, Alternative Masonic Addresses for the Craft Degrees, edited by Philippa Fox, was reviewed by Reginald Church, and it's available from Lewis Masonic, 126 pages, price £7.50. The third book is Logic Working of Craft Ceremonies by the Logic Ritual Association. Now with instructions, a much expanded edition of Logic Rituals. One of the fascinations of Freemasonry under the United Grand Lodge of England is that there are many different craft rituals which can make visits to other lodges so intriguing. Emulation, Universal West End, Oxford, Standard, Taylors, Revised, Logic and Stability are well known. Others such as Carver, Sussex, Castle, Veritas, Nigerian, Plymouth, Common Sense, Bristol or Annick are less so. Those such as Emulation have long had detailed stage instructions, so to speak, so that a lodge can sometimes manage with just a rehearsal or two before the meeting. Other workings have not and have relied much more heavily on lodges of instruction to promote and hand on the detail of the floor work. Until now, Logic was one of those. Indeed, during the past 30 or so years since this ritual was revised, many Logic lodges have found it hard to keep well-attended lodges of instruction going. Moreover, as so many of us know, the pace and pattern of life is very different these days, especially for younger members who can find it harder than ever to spare the time preparing for the lodge meetings, no matter how much they love their Freemasonry. As a result, the Logic Ritual Association decided to bite the bullet and greatly expand both the general introductory notes and the instructions throughout each ceremony. The outcome is now a rather plumper and much more interesting ritual book than most, which should greatly help Logic lodges provide more uniform ceremonies. As well as being pretty much essential to members of lodges practicing this ritual, the book may be of great interest to anyone fascinated by the similarities and differences between craft rituals. If they've not already done so, Let us hope other ritual associations will soon follow suit. And that review was by Julian Perry, and the book Logic Working of Craft Ceremonies by the Logic Ritual Association is published by Lewis Masonic, 361 pages, priced £15.
The fourth book review is for The Full Spectrum of Freemasonry by Richard L. Gann, and the review is by Geometers. A rather mixed bag, for those interested in Mark Masonry. The Full Spectrum of Freemasonry is a collection of academic papers that sets out to provide a better understanding of how the other Masonic orders have grown and developed in parallel with craft masonry. Sadly, I feel that the book is structurally incapable of achieving this aim. Two of its six chapters are essentially CVs of hitherto relatively obscure Freemasons, both with Mark connections. Three chapters are about the Mark degree and its headquarters, and only one attempts to explore the other orders. The book's cover is a graphical illustration of the relative numbers of members of all Masonic orders, except the craft. Chapter 1 does explore the development of the other orders alongside the craft, although given that it is less than 20 pages once the illustrations are removed, this is little more than scratching the surface. Chapters 2 to 4 cover three aspects of Mark Masonry, taking around 100 pages to cover the development and establishment of the degree, the headquarters buildings it has had, and some of its luminaries, as depicted in the art collection at Mark Mason's Hall. Chapters 5 and 6 describe the Masonic and non-Masonic lives of two individuals, both of whom deserve to be better known. I struggle to know who this book should be recommended to. Certainly, anyone intrigued by the art they see at Mark Mason's Hall should find it a useful book, and scholars of Mark Masonry more generally might well also find it helpful. Given that its academic format is unlikely to appeal to the average reader, I also feel that the title is somewhat confusing. Something more Mark-related would make things clearer.
And the book, The Full Spectrum of Freemasonry by Richard L. Gann, is published by Lewis Masonic, 250 pages, and the price is £25. Now we come to the charity section, and a couple of articles, actually more than two. The first one is entitled The Cost of Living, A Helping Hand, and we're starting on page 69. Just as we were starting to recover financially and emotionally from the pandemic, we were hit with another challenge, the rise in the cost of living. Since the start of this crisis, the Masonic Charitable Foundation, the MCF, the Freemasons charity, has received an increasing number of inquiries about financial and mental health support. For most people, the crisis means looking at household budgets and cutting back wherever they can. However, for some, it means not having enough money to put food on the table or heat their homes. The price of basic needs, such as heating and food, are continuing to increase, and people are undoubtedly thinking about what they can do to get through this difficult period. The MCF can help Freemasons and their family members access the statutory support they're entitled to, as well as talk about any MCF support available for them. MCF advisor Caroline Wales says a lot of people reaching out for help are unaware of the state benefits they may be entitled to, so we help them to complete a full benefits check and any applications. I spoke to a woman whose husband died after she had cared for him for 10 years. Her caring role was so time-consuming that she hadn't considered or been aware of the benefits she could claim and which she desperately needed when the cost of living started to rise. Thankfully, we've helped her access disability living allowance and pension credit, which she was entitled to all along. Freemasons and their family members can also get help for financial or personal challenges, as well as physical or mental health conditions, by applying for an MCF grant. Once eligibility has been confirmed, the MCF team can help with the application process and provide the support needed. And if you're looking for financial support during the cost of living crisis, you can visit mcf.org.uk/FMT60/crisis.
Mental well-being. Another issue that the cost of living crisis has highlighted is debt, with 4.6 million low-income households in the UK behind on at least one bill. Dealing with money worries, as well as poor mental health, can feel like a losing battle. Mental illness often makes it harder to earn and manage money, and debt can trigger or worsen conditions such as anxiety, depression, and stress. It's unsurprising that one in two adults with debt also has a mental illness. According to the Office for National Statistics, 77% of adults in the UK reported feeling very or somewhat worried about the rising costs of living. For many, worry and fear have quickly led to depression, stress, and anxiety. The Masonic Charitable Foundation advisor Caroline Wales says, "There's no doubt that the recent spike in mental health issues is linked to the cost of living. More than 90% of people calling for support have expressed feelings of anxiety about the current climate. There has been a significant increase in referrals to our free counselling service, and some financial support cases have even been recategorised as safeguarding cases. If a Freemason or their close family members are experiencing low mood, symptoms of depression, anxiety, stress, or any other conditions affecting their mental well-being, they can reach out to the MCF for support. It offers an independent team of professional counsellors and therapists who are registered and accredited by the UK Council for Psychotherapy."
And if you want to find out more about the MCF's mental health support, go to mcf.org.uk/FMT60/mental health. Now, the next article is about the Masonic Charitable Foundation's sixth impact report, which celebrates the end of its five-year strategy and details the work of the 2021 to 2022 financial year. In the years since the MCF was established, it has awarded more than £100 million in grants on behalf of Freemasonry, or £60,000 per day. During 2021-22, new projects have been launched, new partnerships established, and the MCF has responded to national and global events such as the impact of COVID-19 on individuals and communities. Towards the end of the 21-22 financial year, it responded to the growing humanitarian and refugee crisis in Ukraine. Within days of the invasion, the MCF awarded a £50,000 grant to the British Red Cross and launched a fundraising appeal within Freemasonry that raised £500,000 in only a few days. This fund is now being allocated to support aid agencies working in the affected areas, as well as initiatives and projects in England and Wales. Behind those impressive numbers, there are stories of real people being helped during challenging times. Take Adrian, for example, who had a heart attack that left him unable to work. He was supported by the MCF and can now focus on his recovery. Meanwhile, carers in Bedfordshire, a charity that helps unpaid carers of all ages in the area, also received a grant from the MCF to provide support for its important work. And the headlines of the report are as follows: £19.6 million of charitable support funded entirely by Freemasons, their families and friends, was awarded by the MCF through 5,700 grants to help the most vulnerable and disadvantaged people in society. The MCF funded more than 726 local and national charities, as well as 3,281 disadvantaged individuals and families. £234,000 was given immediately in response to 9 natural disasters. And you can read the full report by going to impact.mcf.org.uk/FMT60. And just to wrap up, 5 years of impact this year marks the end of the MCF's five-year strategy period, and it couldn't have been prouder of everything that it has achieved. In the past 5 years, more than 31,000 grants were awarded to households, totaling over £66 million. More than 8,000 households were supported, including 1,200 children and 3,700 people over the age of 66. The MCF is now moving to a new and exciting phase, and you'll hear about future plans soon.
On page 72, Pakistan flood victims receive £30,000 in relief. Donations enabled the purchase of clean drinking water and tents for families in need. the many thousands of people who have had their lives devastated by the unprecedented floods in Pakistan are being given emergency relief thanks to a grant of £30,000 to the British Red Cross and UNICEF from the Masonic Charitable Foundation. More than 1,000 people, including hundreds of children, have lost their lives in the disaster, and Freemasonry, through the MCF, responded by partnering with the British Red Cross and UNICEF to provide emergency relief to the survivors. An estimated 33 million people from three of the country's four provinces have been affected by heavy rain and floods, many of them losing everything. The victims are some of the most vulnerable people in the world, including 400,000 refugees from Afghanistan. Luke Tredgett, head of emergencies at the British Red Cross, said, "We're very grateful for this generous grant. It will allow us to provide immediate emergency relief to people who are in desperate need. This disaster has devastated vast areas of the country and left millions of people in urgent need of help. In addition to the loss of life and destruction of homes and property, millions have lost their livelihoods. Some 4.5 million acres of crops have been destroyed, and more than 1 million livestock have been killed. UNICEF and the British Red Cross will each receive £15,000 from the MCF for their relief efforts. This could provide clean drinking water, emergency food relief for hundreds of households, tents to provide basic shelter, or mosquito nets to protect flood survivors from malaria and dengue. I'm very pleased we've been able to help UNICEF and the British Red Cross with their relief effort in Pakistan," said MCF Chief Executive Les Hutchinson. "This is the most terrible situation for millions of people, and I'm proud that Freemasons are providing help and support to charities working on the ground with those affected."
And finally, in this edition of the magazine, three letters to... And finally, in this edition of the magazine, three letters to the editor. If you want to write to the editor, FMT, Freemasons Hall, Great Queen Street, London, WC2B5AZ, or email editor@freemasonrytoday.com, a note at the bottom says the opinions expressed here are those of the authors and do not necessarily reflect the views of the United Grand Lodge of England. All UGLE members' letters printed are appended with the contributor's name, his mother lodge name and number, the town where that lodge meets, and the province. Please include these details at the foot of your letter. And please enclose an SAE, stamped addressed envelope, for any items sent by mail that you wish to have returned. So the first is from Bill Smith, the Almoner at Royal Sovereign Light Lodge 6630. He writes, "Sirs, the brethren of the Royal Sovereign Light Lodge number 6630 would like to congratulate worshipful brother Jim Ashton on his distinguished Masonic career, FMT Autumn Issue. As a closing remark in the article, the question is posed, can anyone beat that? May we introduce you to worshipful brother Harry Waddingham. Harry, a retired teacher and former matelot, he was sunk twice during the war, was initiated into the Archbishop Tennyson's Lodge, London, number 5163, in 1954, taking the master's chair of the lodge at least twice and ultimately achieving London Grand Rank. On moving to Bexhill-on-Sea in 1994, he joined the Royal Sovereign Light Lodge. While not quite matching Jim's length of service in 2016, shortly after his 100th birthday, we had the greatest pleasure installing him into the chair of our lodge. To mark this momentous achievement, present at the ceremony were the Provincial Grand Master, Deputy Grand Master and Assistant Grand Master of Sussex, together with other members of the provincial team. In recognition of this achievement, Harry was granted a field promotion at the meeting to past provincial junior grand warden in the province of Sussex, and on completion of his year in office was made an honorary member of the lodge. Now, at the age of 106 years, Harry is still active, in good health, and can be seen on YouTube giving thoughts for the day on behalf of his church. We were wondering whether Harry, this remarkable man, is our oldest living and active Freemason." And as I said, that's from Bill Smith, Almoner, Royal Sovereign Light Lodge 6630. This second letter is from Chris Broad of Strongman Lodge No. 45.
Sirs, I was truly amazed at reading Lynn Dunn's article in this summer's edition of FMT on bowel cancer and her own experience of it, as it was a carbon copy of my own situation. I turned 60 last year and was sent the NHS test kit that my wife nagged me senseless to complete, which I duly did for a quiet life. Exactly the same happened. I was invited to have a colonoscopy, but the letter said it is normally not cancer. It was, and I have been on two courses of chemotherapy and am now on a cancer suppressant called panitumumab. I have had more scans, consultations and treatment than you can shake a stick at, and all done incredibly urgently. I would like to offer my praise to all the nurses and staff at the Sir William Rouse Cancer Unit at Kingston-on-Thames Hospital, but unfortunately I do not have sufficient vocabulary to express my feelings and extreme gratitude. I would also like to express my sincerest gratitude to my lodge, Strongman Lodge No. 45, for putting me forward for LGR last year, for which I was approved. It was a huge morale booster for me at the beginning of my first bout of treatment. And finally, well done, Lynn, for your fantastic achievements. Long may they continue. Kindest regards, Chris Broad, Strongman Lodge No. 45.
And finally, this last letter is from Anthony EJ, Enugu Lodge No. 5440, EC, Nigeria. Sirs, I'd like to share the oration delivered at the 70th installation ceremony of Granville Lodge No. 7212, EC, of Jabez Bunting Rogers Wright, Jr. When I heard about the selection of Jabez Bunting Rogers Wright as Master Elect, it came as no surprise that the Brethren of Granville Lodge found him suitable and capable. Jabez is a founder member of African Diaspora, which is to be consecrated in the province of Middlesex, England. As a special interest group, our founder members all reside in diaspora and share their love for African cuisine, music and art. The group's members are from six African countries spanning four of the five regions of Africa. As coordinator of the group, I have come to know Jabez as culturally astute with a passion for humanity. Jabez is extremely well-travelled and his understanding of so many different cultures is a gift to the group. He is also well-versed in Freemasonry and leads a virtuous and socially oriented life. From my interaction with Jabez, I have come to know him as a man of integrity who is respectful, charitable and friendly. I have no doubt that Jabez's reign will be peaceful and prosperous and that in years to come, the Brethren of Granville Lodge will look back and cherish every moment spent with him. Here is wishing Brother Jabez and Brethren of Granville Lodge good health, happiness and prosperity. And once again, that letter was from Anthony EJ, Enugu Lodge No. 5440 EC in Nigeria. And that completes our reading of FMT Magazine, the official journal of the United Grand Lodge of England. This was issue No. 60 for winter 2022. It is copyright the United Grand Lodge of England 2022, and you can find us on the web at freemasonrytoday.com.